Brian Noonan on 720 WGN, finally back in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue on a Sunday night. Seems like it's been since, I don't know, November since we've been here on a Sunday. Now, I've been here since, but the Sunday night crew has not been assembled, and here we are. Oh, my goodness. Big show planned for you tonight, as always. If you want to get involved, that's more fun. 312-981-7200. That's the phone and the text when you call in. You'll be talking to executive producer extraordinaire Cody. Oh, my gosh, it's a new year. I got a new title, Goff. He's from Rockford, Illinois, and he's going to answer the call. So if you're nice to him, you get to talk to me. That's that. If you want to keep in touch with us via social media, Brian Noonan Show on Facebook and Twitter. You know how that goes. Roger Badish up in the newsroom. Happy holidays to both of you. It's been, seems like ages since I saw you. Almost like it was a different year, in fact.
So, yeah, I feel so much older.
I do, too, yeah. For many, many reasons. But, yeah, so we're here. 2018, off to a week-long start. We weren't here last year for New Year's Day because there were things going on. But we're back, and it looks like Sundays are good because the Blackhawks move their game next week. So I asked them personally. I called John and Jay, and I called the NHL, and I said, hey, Gary Bettman, can you move the Hawks game so we can be back on Sunday nights? And they went, you know what, Brian, for you, yes, we'll do the Hawks game at 11:30 next Sunday. So we'll be on again next Sunday and then four Sundays in the foreseeable future. So that is excellent news. We are glad we're back. Happy that you've stuck with us through another year, Cody and I did some figuring today, some ciphering, like Jethro Bodine, and we realized it's been 6 years since we started the Sunday show.
Wow.
I said to Cody, how long have we been doing this Sunday show? Like 3 years? And he was like, no, it's been more than that. I was like, well, I was trying to think back of the whole history of this show. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, as I ran through my, every once in a while, I like to sit back and look at my tenure here at WGN.
Mm-hmm.
The rise and fall, as it were. or the rise, or the kind of I got up once and then it was, I fell back down. Either way, doesn't matter. So yeah, it turns out 6 years ago, in January, the management at that time decided they were going to do away with overnight programming on the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was holding down Friday night, and so where Matt Bubal and Dave Plyer are now, and kind of where Patty is too, Saturday nights we did 11 to 5. So Saturday night into Sunday morning,
right,
we did that. So we did 11 to 5, and then we did the show that Matt has now. We did, mm-hmm, 2 to 5, which would be Saturday morning, and then Saturday night into Sunday morning. Either way, at that time I was also doing Sports Night, which
during
was
the week.
During
yeah.
the week. So they thought, well, in order to keep things, you know, kind of in sync, we'll put Brian on from 7 to 10 on Sunday night, so that from Sunday through Friday, Brian is a presence from 7 to 10. And I thought, well, that's very nice, you know, because they could have just whacked us from the weekends and been on their merry way, but they didn't. But then there was some confusion, and a show that they thought wasn't going to be here anymore was going to be here for an hour, so they moved us from 6 to 9, and that was 6 years ago, almost to the day. That wow. we started doing this 6 to 9 show. So, what do you think of that?
I think that's awesome.
I think it's insanity that I thought it was like 3 or 4 years. I really have no concept of time.
Well,
which is probably why I still think that I'm 32. You know, I still act like I'm 13. Yeah. There's a switch in my brain that needs to be flipped so I can realize, hey, old man, you got to change your evil ways, baby.
Yeah.
It's a song, Cody.
You don't like, no wonder you don't like time travel storylines. You can't even.
Wait, because I can't comprehend regular time. How am I going to comprehend traveling in time? Like, I still think Molly's in third grade. Well, rationally, I know that she's 5 months away from graduating from college. She's leaving. She's at the airport right now. So I had to say goodbye at home. So
aww.
She is, yeah, well, that's all right. Listen, I wouldn't have been much help carrying this.
Actually, we said goodbye to David today, too.
Really?
He took off, him and his friend driving to New York, and then he's going to catch a plane to Spain.
España.
Yeah, because, you know, he's helping the teachers there teach English. So he's got back for a second semester.
Very nice.
Yeah. Mi amore, I don't think that's Spanish.
No, that's Italian.
Mi amore would be Spanish.
Would it?
Yeah.
I never said I was bilingual. Listen. I'm a pretty unstable genius and fairly smart. So
unstable
I don't want
genius.
I'm just trying
I'm an
to get
unstable
at,
genius.
I'm just trying to get ahead of the callers.
Yeah, sure.
Oh. We've got a smart listening audience.
I understand that, and don't think they don't tell me nonstop how smart they are. And oh man, they love to point out people's shortcomings. They love it.
To be fair, so do we.
Oh, of course. That's that's our stock in trade. So he's going back to España. Which
Ibiza.
City again?
The island of Ibiza.
Yeah. Do they even go to school in Ibiza?
It's not party time there now. It's regular season.
It's party time there
now. Well, it's the summertime is when all the people from the rest of Europe come there.
I'm going to be honest with you. If I lived on an island, it would always be party time. Always.
It's not so much. Even though he says for the first time in a long time, the regulars who live on Ibiza, the prices that get jacked up during the summer for all the tourists, they didn't lower them.
Oh.
Yeah. So
no good.
So he's paying like premium price
for
everything.
Yeah, the locals are supposed to get a break in the off season.
Well, yeah, no,
not so. Do you think it's not the party time because he's talking to his dad? You think that could be? Because I would imagine if I was living in a party paradise and my dad said, how's work? Oh, man, it's tough. I'm busting my back every day teaching these kids English. Mm-hmm. Oh, is there any nightlife? I don't know. I'm in bed by 7. That would be the line I would give to my father.
No, I will admit that he can find the parties on his own, and he does.
Well, sure.
Yeah, he knows he knows where the action's at.
Again, he's on a beautiful island.
Yeah,
in Spain.
Yeah, even though it's still a little nippy there, it's not like
a tropical
paradise.
What's a little nippy in Ibiza?
Yeah,
60.
No, about 45.
All right, that's cool.
Yeah,
but I think they have indoor plumbing and stuff there. So I think it'll be all right. They have heaters. I remember when I was in Spain, they had heat in the room.
Oh, that's right. You had a nice vacation.
They had a toilet. You know, El baño.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, sure.
Look at that.
A little.
Props.
Oh, thank you.
I can't just call you out when you're wrong.
No, I need a little. No, I think you should. Even when I'm wrong, you should tell me I'm right. I'm adopting a whole new mentality. It seems to be working on the East Coast. Everything must be complete flattery and support, no matter how wackadoodle everything I say is. You need to support me.
That's a great idea, Brian.
It's a good. Thank you, Cody. Perfect. Is it the best idea ever?
One of the best.
That's it. Am I a legendary broadcaster?
Tremendous.
I am
legendary.
A legendary broadcaster. And again, an unstable genius. We'll get to this. How were your holidays, Roger? This should take an hour. How were your holidays, Roger?
They were wonderful. I was basically working here, but we had a good time with the family.
Roger and I saw each other. Cody, of course, doesn't work here over the holidays. Yeah. He's too good for it.
Yeah.
It's almost like he's a tenured professor. He takes off, legal holidays and all the other days. Roger and I were here during the holidays. We crossed paths a couple times. Mm-hmm. Said hello.
How was that for you?
It was wonderful.
It was
very
good.
Nice. Yeah,
it was
nice,
fun.
Nice. Roger got to work.
Things.
I got to work. Sure. It was nice.
Well said, Brian.
How'd you do over the holidays? What'd you do? Anything?
Drank a lot of eggnog and brandy.
Nice.
So much.
Together?
Yeah.
Not with brandy. That would not be good for his new wife.
Yeah, no.
Oh.
I had just the eggnog and brandy, not the eggnog and brandy with brandy.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
I thought of you. I had a few eggnogs. And if you listen to our podcast, the Epic Eggnog Hunt podcast, which you should go back and listen to because I think it's timeless. I thought about you the few times I had eggnog. I did not have whipped cream available to me, so I just drank the eggnog. I confined myself to like a couple eggnogs on Christmas Eve. And then I think one more. And this year I bought a half gallon because I was, and then Debbie had a couple, so we finished off the half gallon. But I think I only had 4 eggnogs this season.
Pro tip, if you get the whipped cream, get the blue Ready Whip, the extra creamy one.
Roger, have you ever heard of this? Cody claims that if you put whipped cream on eggnog, it's better.
I've never had whipped cream on eggnog.
Never.
Just straight eggnog with a little maybe cinnamon on top.
You don't put any Christian Brothers in there?
Well, yeah, I'm just putting it on top. I'm not saying what goes in with it.
Okay.
Just the stuff you sprinkle on top.
Being evasive.
But I didn't do any, even though I know that for me there is lactose-free eggnog that is made,
really?
So I can imbibe until the cows come home.
Well, not the cow. You don't want to be hanging out with
the
cows.
Unless it's lactose-free.
Right.
I will say...
Is there a lactose-free cow?
I don't know. I haven't checked.
I don't believe so.
I don't think so. No, by definition.
It's called hamburger.
I tried the dusting of cinnamon. I thought the dusting of nutmeg was better.
Okay.
Yeah. But 2 fingers of brandy, a little bit of nog, a little bit of whipped cream, dust it with nutmeg, call it a day. But
I've
some
never
eggnog,
heard of the whipped cream. That's
me either.
New.
Some eggnog comes with nutmeg in it.
Ah,
which I think is cheating.
It is cheating.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It might be an ingredient. Like the Oberweis, I think that I've seen little specks of stuff. That might be eggnog.
Hmm.
Or I let it sit too long. I'm going to go with the
Now, do you warm it up or leave it cold?
Cold.
Cold? See, I warm it up.
Do you really?
I like warm eggnog.
Wow, never had it warm.
I've had it both ways, but I like it warmed
up. All right, how are we not remembering that? Why didn't we talk about this in November so I could have tried it out all December? Now we're talking about January.
I wasn't in that conversation.
It was, you know.
For some reason.
Well, it was not going to be the scheduled end of the year. We ended up not doing one. The big
celebration?
Yeah, no, we didn't do
that. Oh, okay.
So this was just going to be one, and then Molly was here, so she... Oh, I'm not going to recap the whole thing, but it was a hunt for eggnog. And then Cody started pouring. And you've heard the term two fingers of liquor. Cody just used it. It's supposed to be two fingers.
Sure. Yeah.
So that's maybe, I don't know, is that an inch?
Yeah, about.
Inch of brandy?
About an inch.
Yeah. Sure. Cody's fingers must be thick. Like,
well, he spreads them out.
Like Andre the Giant thick.
Yeah, he spreads it out.
Yeah,
it's
like
half a cup.
So Cody's fingers is like 5 inches.
Like,
that's his two fingers. I think he's holding water. He's swollen. He's got some sort of affliction. Or very gnarled arthritis, so his hands don't go together.
Yeah.
So while he is only holding up two fingers, there is spread apart like you were making a peace sign.
Well, it's from all that game playing. That's why they're swollen.
Could
they're
be.
So big.
He could have some sort of problem. But yeah, if you go back and listen to that and see how Cody fares as the night goes on.
I will say that's the best podcast of the season. The nutmeg or the eggnog hunt
the
was
eggnog
phenomenal.
Hunt.
By the way, Oberweis eggnog does have nutmeg listed as an ingredient.
Oh, it's there. Listen, I contend theirs is still the best eggnog.
Oh gosh, yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
Golly
gee whiz, Franz. All right, listen, there's a lot to get to tonight. We're going to talk to the composers, producers, and director of a brand new musical that is going to make its debut at the Chicago Musical Theater Festival coming up next month. We'll talk to those guys after 7 o'clock. We're going to talk about Dry January, and we'll talk about why I'm wearing a sandal in this weather. A lot to get to. First, we've got to do this. Then the Golden Globes are starting. I want to talk about this protest, and there's a protest happening. I've noticed it a little bit on the television.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, all in black. And you know what?
Well, thanks, Roger. I was teasing that, but that's okay. You just roll
right
through.
I didn't say what was in black. Tuxedos are black, aren't they?
All right. Let's do this, and then we'll talk more about it and let Roger talk about it, too. It's WGN. The Golden Globes have started. If you don't know, Roger talked about it. There's a protest going on during the Golden Globes, which is everybody was supposed... It was started out with women, and then it turns into guys. They're all going to be protesting by wearing all black for the... to protest all the, it's a silent protest, sexual misconduct in Hollywood by wearing all black gowns on the red carpet. I guess. But does that really do anything? I think black is usually a big color at award shows anyway, especially for guys. The tuxedos are all black, but now guys are wearing black shirts. And I know the women a lot of times wear different color gowns to set themselves apart, but I think they all look stunning in black anyway. So, I get it. It's a huge deal, and it's a huge story, and it's going to be addressed. I'm sure Seth Meyers is going to talk about it endlessly in his monologue, as he should. I'm sure there will be a lot of great comments in acceptance speeches, as there should be. I just think at some point there's things that are like, okay, this is... It doesn't seem like it does anything except draw more publicity, where we're going to watch now to see who's wearing black and who isn't. And I've already seen people that I follow on Twitter complaining that guys are wearing white shirts with their black tuxedos. So now are we going to start saying that any guy who wore a white shirt is a supporter of all these horrible human beings who are perpetrating these violent acts against women?
Well, you know there's people out there who are going to twist it around like that.
I know, but it's so stupid.
Yes.
It's...
Nobody said it was a smart thing.
No. Well, it's Hollywood, so yeah. There's a lot of things that aren't smart.
The thing that I was getting at before
yes.
the break was that my original thought from the news stories I was reading yesterday, announcing that this was all going to happen, the original stories started implying that the carpet itself was going to be black and not red.
No.
But
on.
It's all red. So.
Well, I'm sure the... Hollywood correspondents, the foreign press are not going to go, yeah, we want a black carpet at our event.
Yeah.
No, here's the what you choose to wear is your own choice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's up to you. You wear whatever you want. But it's our show, and so, you know.
Yeah, we're going to do it upright.
I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think if you really want to protest,
mm-hmm.
don't show up. don't accept your award.
Well, you know that's
or
not Hollywood. They can't.
I understand.
Or
that.
They could do.
Or have, if you win, mm-hmm. have one of the women who have been a victim of this, have one of them go up and accept. Maybe one of the women who are not A-list actresses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have the PA, have the makeup woman, have the secretary at Weinstein or whoever else's production house, allegedly,
mm-hmm.
accept the award for you. That, and have her tell her story. You know,
who
do
was it
that
wasn't Marlon Brando won an Academy Award? And
yes, he sent the Native American
right.
one up to accept for him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's... And I'm not saying these people are being disingenuous about their outrage. They're not. But I also know that it's Hollywood, and they can't resist slapping themselves on the back.
It seems to be taking a back seat to the glamour and glitz of the event.
Right. Well, and you know what? That's fine. If you want to turn it in, if the Hollywood Foreign Press wants to allow it to turn into something, which it always does, because people are drinking, and in vino veritas... There's some, there's a little
wow.
Latin for you, Cody. I dropped that right in there.
You're killing it, Brian.
Pronounced correctly. I'm sorry, what? Say it again.
You're killing it, Brian.
That's right. Louder. Anyway, but it's part of the new regime. It's a regime change here, Roger.
Yeah, I see. I see.
Build it up.
I don't know if I can keep up.
Build up the unstable genius. That's what you got to do all the time.
Okay.
Build me up, Buttercup.
What?
So, yeah, I don't know if it's meaningful. Again, I'm finding all of the women look stunning in black gowns. I think black is a very good color. I think guys who are in basic black are fine. I think the guys who are wearing black tuxedo shirts look like they should be extras in a mafia movie. But again, that's just me.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean I am negating or minimizing what happened. I'm just saying this is a dumb and superfluous protest.
Well, I think they're using the public broadcast as a messenger, as the vehicle
right.
for their
and this,
message.
And
so
this
they're
is
using
not a message
this
that
as
is
an opportunity.
Anymore. This message is now out, as it should be.
Well,
here's the thing: if you want to really, and I know sexual harassment is not about how a woman dresses,
mm-hmm.
but if you're going to make it about how we dress, then everybody wear a black burqa, cover up everything but your eyes,
ew.
And just show. Yeah, ew. Yeah, who would watch that? Then just show up.
We just got the best text message.
Which one?
It's from Sue. It says, is a fashion statement by women really the best way to send a message about sexual harassment? A fashion statement?
No. Sue, you are absolutely right. No, because fashion is not the point here. But we're going to wear really low-cut black dresses and go, oh, sexual harassment is bad. Who did your dress? I don't know, but it slid up to my navel and cut down to my navel and... I look, it's very navelicious. On the other side, why am I wearing a sandal? Why? Why? We'll talk about that and so much more. But first, we must do this before the news on WGN. I have been hobbled for the last... this is the first... I haven't been out of my house since Wednesday evening. Today, this was the first time I've left my house since Wednesday evening. Because Wednesday, I had to have surgery on my big toe, on my left foot.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Well, remember back in March or April when I came back from my beautiful vacation, my anniversary trip to the Dominican Republic? My wife and I had been there. And I came back and did a show, and then the next day I was in the hospital.
Yeah, everyone was telling you should have gone in earlier.
Right, yep. Right. Well, the whole thing with cellulitis started because while I was in the ocean on my very first day, I felt like something slice my toe on the bottom mm-hmm. of my big toe. But I figured it was just a scratch, and I never really looked at it, which was dumb.
It wasn't that painful when it happened.
Well, you know, you're in the ocean, you step on a rock, you figure, okay. And then it didn't really bother me too much, but you all know how that ended. It ended with me 3 days in the hospital for cellulitis. Well, that the wound on the bottom of my toe has never closed.
Oh.
And I would put, you know, Band-Aids and Neosporin on it all the mm-hmm. time, and it would get smaller, and I'm thinking, oh, well, one day this is going to close, right?
Yeah.
Well, now, we got home at the beginning of April. In September, I thought to myself, well, now it's been about 4 months, 5 months. I probably should go to a doctor. Because I had gone to my regular doctor
mm-hmm.
After I had been in with cellulitis, and he looked at it, and he went, he said, well, you know what, just put some, hydrogen peroxide on there.
Hydrogen peroxide,
yeah. The brown stuff. Hydrogen peroxide and Neosporin, and it'll close up.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that for a few months. And now, again, a few months. And it's still, you know, I would bleed through bandages. I was leaving. If I got up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, there'd be little drops of blood on the floor. So it wasn't closing.
Well, you needed, like, you know, an open wound specialist.
Well, sure I did.
There are those out there.
I know there are. And there's doctors for everything, Roger.
Right.
The point is you have to go see them. So finally, like I said, in September, I said to myself, I should probably go to a podiatrist.
Uh-huh.
Maybe they'll know what's happening. So I found a podiatrist right by the house, and I went to him, and I liked him. And he was like, he looked at my toe for 10 seconds, and he said, oh, yeah, that's a classic pressure sore. And I'm like, well, doctor, here's what happened. And he goes, I understand, but it's a classic pressure sore. Because what happened was there was a bone spur, like, on the bottom of my big toe bone. And it was fine pressing on the skin until I cut the skin open. And then it was pressing in and wouldn't let the skin totally heal. Is everything all right, boys? You look panicked. Everybody looks panicked.
Roger just told me I have guests in the lobby, which is weird because usually I'm called by someone else.
By somebody in the lobby?
He said apparently he couldn't get a hold of you.
What?
Yeah.
That's weird. Security couldn't get a hold of Cody?
Yeah.
That doesn't bode well for when we're attacked.
That's weird.
That is weird. Well, I don't like to see you two in full panic mode either, because I'm like, I'm not going to keep telling my story if something is terribly amiss.
No, there's nothing wrong.
Well, the speaker in here is so clear. I literally sounded like somebody was standing behind me, and I didn't even know it was Roger, because I was listening to you so intently.
Right. Well, why?
Because you captivate me. It's
right,
2018.
Exactly.
Because you're the best.
That's right. Build up the unstable genius. The new motto for 2018. In case you're just joining us, that's the new motto here on the show. Build up the unstable genius.
That was actually the motto for 2017.
But nobody adhered to it.
No.
You guys just flipped it to tear down the unstable genius. That was the problem. You didn't follow it to the letter.
I'm talking about a different unstable genius.
Oh, got it. So this bone was pressing on the open wound and would not allow it to heal.
Oh.
So the doctor says, well, here's what you got to do. I can do a surgery in the office. It'll take about 20 minutes. We open your toe. We shave down the bone. And then, boom, it heals right up. I know I glossed over that because you may be eating.
He sounded very sure of himself.
Well, he sure did. He sure did, which always makes me nervous.
It didn't convince you?
Oh, it convinced me. But then I said, all right, well, how long does it take to heal?
Uh-huh.
He said 3 weeks. Well, that was fine, but I thought, first I said to myself, I've got Cody's wedding. I can't be hobbling around at Cody's wedding. I got to do it after Cody's wedding. I've got to.
Mm-hmm.
Then Cody's wedding came.
Right.
And we made it through there, and he's still married as far as I know. Things going well in the new year? You still?
We've made it almost 3 months.
Because I'm one for one.
Yeah, one for one. We'll keep your record pretty clean.
Because I am, what?
I'm also one for one, by
you
the way.
You are one for one.
You're wonderful.
That's right. Thank you. I figure if it's good enough for, you know, the leader of the free world, it's good enough for me. Just keep heaping on the false praise. I don't care. So then it was something else came up, and I was like, oh, I can't do it now because I've got, we were going to New Orleans in early November. I said, well, I can't do it before we go to New Orleans. I don't want to be hobbled. Then, so I'll do it when I come back. Then we came back, and it was going to be through the holidays, and I thought, well, I can't do it during the holidays because I've got a lot of places to be. It's the holidays. I don't want to have my foot in a boot or a shoe. All right? Then I decided, well, I'm going to Mardi Gras in 4 weeks, and I need to get this done because I'm tired of having to put Band-Aids and Neosporin on my toe every day. I'm tired of not being able to, you know, because everything was getting. I was going in all this time every couple of weeks, and he would clean off the callus that was building around this open sore, and he'd go, "Oh well, the good news is it's not infected, so you know, we could do that. We could do this forever," which means me coming in, paying my deductible, having him clean off the callus, and putting a new Band-Aid on. I could have done that indefinitely, or I could have opted for the surgery. So. Long story, even longer. Thursday, I have the surgery. And, you know me. I don't like to take painkillers. Plus, all right, I understand the opioid epidemic is horrible in this country. 90-some people die every day from opioid overdoses. It is a horrible thing. I am not an opioid abuser by any sense of the imagination. However, because 2017 was the year that my body began to finally betray me. I had surgery in October or November. I had gone to the emergency room in October where they'd given me this hydrocodone. So when I saw the doctor in October, we were originally planning the foot surgery, he gave me a prescription. He said, hold on to this prescription, and right before you come in for the procedure, go get it filled because you're going to need this painkiller. And I was like, it's my big toe. He goes, you're going to need it. Okay. So last Monday, my lovely wife and daughter, while I was here, they go to my local Walgreens, and they said, hey, we'd like to fill this prescription. Well, you would have thought I was the star of Narcos.
Yep.
Because, oh, my goodness,
yep.
The insurance company wasn't going to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
Walgreens wasn't going to fill it.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor had to call the insurance company and Walgreens to assure them that I was not, even though the insurance company said, oh, yes, we see these are from two different doctors in two different locations for two different ailments.
Yep, they don't care.
They don't care.
Nope. And you had to have your picture taken front and side.
Oh, my goodness.
Thumbprints.
I had to leave a stool sample. It was horrifying.
Yes, I know all about it.
Yes. So finally, we said, well, what if we just pay for it?
Oh, no.
Oh, no. No, they let me pay for it. Cash is king, buddy.
All right.
It doesn't matter if I'm an opioid abuser if I have cash.
Oh.
It only matters to the insurance company if they have to pay for my abuse of opioids.
I got it.
Which, again, this is how little I use painkillers when I have surgery. I still had the entire prescription from October that they gave me, and the only reason I didn't have any left over from the surgery in November was because that really hurt, and I followed the doctor's orders and took the painkillers the first couple days after my gallbladder surgery. Just saying that, I sound like I'm 100. Because I'm listing surgeries all within like 2 months.
I know, look at you.
I'm falling apart. What's next? Nothing, because I am the best.
But you look great.
Thank you. I am a picture of health, and I you know what? I am nothing if not the picture of virility. I'm all man.
Is that your walker in the corner?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. It should be. So Debbie said she'd come home and she'd drive me over. Because you know me, I would have driven myself to the podiatrist to get my foot whacked open. But she was like, no, I've got to do it. I'll take you. Okay. Well, she didn't know that they do this when all the other patients aren't there. So she's sitting in the waiting room, and they're doing this in their procedure room, which is just off the waiting room, and they don't bother closing the door because nobody else is in the office.
Right.
So she hears as they're prepping me, which just was basically, you know, a couple shots of local anesthetic, and the doctor and I are talking about all kinds of things.
Were they testing the buzzsaw?
Well, you laugh.
Rev that up?
You laugh.
No, I'm not laughing.
It, when he finally did, after, so I'm sitting in this big chair, and he puts a little screen up in front of me. He goes, you can't see, can you? I go, no, do you want me not to look? He goes, no, do not look. I was like, why? He goes, because even if you could bear to watch it on somebody else, when it's your own thing, your own body being sliced open, you may have a bad reaction.
Especially because the pain may have been numbed,
right.
But you're still probably going to feel some pressure.
Go, what the? Yeah. Because I'd imagine if you look down and you see your big toe splayed open like a carp and a guy about to start buzzsawing your bone,
right.
You're going to have a reaction, even if you're me. And I used to watch the operation on the Learning Channel all the time where they were taking out knees and spleens and all kinds of stuff. I could watch that no problem.
Wow.
But I wonder if looking down at my own foot was going to be the same thing. So they do, you know, all the prep stuff. They sterilize everything. All the instruments are sterilized. They put the drape over. The whole big. It's like I'm going into. Well, I am going into surgery, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's on my toe, so it's not in a big operating theater. Well, you laugh about the buzzsaw, Roger, but they had something, and they have three giant batteries on this cart, and then a cord that goes from the batteries to this wand, which has then different blades that are inserted in it.
Oof.
And the nurse assistant, because he has a nurse, like an operating nurse who's handing him the tools, and I would assume
wiping
pulling back the toe parts and doing all this, the assistant has to press the battery three times, and then she gets a green light, and then he presses the button on this tool, and it's like a Sawzall. Have you ever seen a Sawzall?
Yeah.
It's a reciprocating
with the two blades
saw.
Going back and forth. Yeah.
So
right.
You hold it like a shotgun kind of, and the big blade comes out, and it's Cody's looking it up. And I said to him, I go, man, that sounds like a Sawzall. And he said, it is a Sawzall.
Oh, no.
And that's what they're using. That's what they've got. In, and Debbie is hearing all this. From the. No. She's hearing the... And I don't know if you can smell the bone burning. Thankfully, I don't have a sense of smell.
Probably.
So I can't smell my own blood. I do see it on some of the tools that they're pulling out, and I'm like, that's all glistening. That looks kind of weird. But I had to fight the urge. You know how sometimes when you're on a plane and you're sitting next to the emergency exit and you go, I know what's going to happen if I pull that door, but I kind of want to pull it anyway?
Yes.
Yes. I knew what would happen if I looked over and saw my toe wide open, that I would probably freak.
Oh, gross.
But I wanted to look over so bad, because I took a picture right before he started of it all dressed, before he, you know, before he sat down. And there was a part of me that wanted to lift my camera up and take a picture while he was doing it.
Jeez, you are so bad.
I am a weirdo. But
oh, gross.
Now, I have seen my finger once cut open so deep that I could see the bone.
So did I.
So I didn't pass out then, and I'm
well because you,
Cody,
it wasn't like somebody was doing anything to the bone.
No,
time you saw it.
No,
right.
What's the matter, Cody?
I'm about to pass out. Hearing
why?
You
why
say
he's
that.
Looking at the sawzall?
No. I saw the sawzall. No, when you said to see your own bone,
Wait, you never? That's never happened to you.
Wait, you've never done that?
I've never broken a bone.
You've never cut yourself open or anything.
What happened when you saw your bone, Brian?
I got to get to the hospital.
No, I mean, how did it actually happen that you...
I was using a utility knife trying to cut edging for the basement in my first house.
Yeah.
And the blade slipped and went right down. I have a nice, like, inch and a half scar on my finger.
Okay.
Yeah,
I did.
Horrifying.
I was a kid, and I was riding my bike, and you know how the sidewalk sometimes is higher than the grass? And I was trying to slide the bike up onto the sidewalk, and it fell over, and at the time, I had a chipped front tooth.
Oh!
And it went right into my thumb, and I looked down, it was real quick, and I looked down and saw the white bone before the Dead Sea came back and flooded the bone.
Oh,
and
nice.
I went back home, and my dad was in the Med Corps in World War II, so he put a little butterfly Band-Aid on it,
nice.
And I still have a little scar there on the thumb. Man. But yeah, I saw the white bone and
Cody, come on.
Yeah, what's wrong, Cody?
Yeah, what's wrong, Cody?
This is gross.
Is it? So anyway, all right, I'll tell you. Well, that's the surgery part. I'll tell you.
Yeah, well, so I'll we need the aftermath.
I'll give you the aftermath
okay.
after this.
Okay.
Cody's about to vomit. And Cody's not doing well. I didn't know he was so squeamish. I'm not showing you slides.
Yeah, right.
Maybe I paint. Do I paint that good a picture, Cody?
You paint that good of a picture, Brian.
I do paint a good picture. Thank you, Cody. Am I the best picture painter with words that you know?
You're a real...
A wordsmith.
I almost said Mozart. That would have been really embarrassing.
That would have been bad.
You're a real Monet.
A Monet with words. I paint what? Just watercolors?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. So after Debbie has to... She said during the surgery when the sawzall was going at my bone, she said she almost had to walk next door. Our local brewery is right next door to the podiatrist. And she was like, I almost had to leave and go get a beer. You probably should have, because it was fine for me. It didn't bother me, to tell you the truth. But then I go home, and I've had to wear, you know, the doctor bandaged it up real good and told me I had to keep it dry. So, you know, I haven't, and to stay off it.
Mm-hmm.
So... In order for it to, I want it completely healed well before we go to Mardi Gras. So I did what he said, and Thursday and Friday and yesterday, I pretty much stayed in my chair the whole time. Plus, and I haven't had a lot of surgery. I've just had a couple recently.
Right.
But, so I was taking all these pain meds, and I guess that makes you sleep a lot. Mm-hmm. I haven't slept more in the last 4 days and still felt exhausted every time I woke up than I have since the surgery.
Because it was a drug-induced sleep. It wasn't a natural sleep.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm just, my goodness. I just feel, So, like, yesterday I weaned myself off the painkillers.
Okay.
So I took one yesterday morning instead of two. It says two every 4 to 6 hours, and I did that, like, the first 2.5 days. Then yesterday I took one pill at 8 a.m. and one when I went to bed.
Okay.
And today I haven't taken any. So.
Well, you should go to like half the pill.
Nope.
And then
no need.
Right.
Now I'm going to muscle through my withdrawal because you know I'm an addict.
Yeah,
that's why they wouldn't let me have it.
Yeah.
But it's been I have become such an old man. Now anytime anybody comes anywhere near me, like, what's my foot? Don't step on my foot.
Come on.
The dogs come here. Don't go. Don't watch my foot. Don't step on me.
I was driving in.
Oh, driving in's fine because it's my left foot.
Oh, okay.
So, all right. But I did have to get rid of the... They gave me a surgery shoe, not a boot, but just a shoe.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have them in my size. So they had the biggest the surgery shoe came was a 13, and I wear a 15.
Wow.
So I know. You know what they say about big feet, don't you, Cody? Yeah, that's right. Big shoes are needed, even after surgery. So it didn't make sense to me, and the doctor knew this. He's like, well, it's a little, it'll be okay. And I'm thinking, but the part of my toe that I really, part of my foot that I really want to protect is now hanging over this too small surgical shoe.
That's not
Doesn't
good.
Sound good no. at all. I'm not a medical professional.
Right.
But I know how many times I've worn shoes that are too small and things don't go well.
Yeah, that's not safe.
Thankfully, my lovely wife has a good brain in her head. She said, hey, don't you have some sandals? I was like, oh, I do. I have a pair of Tevas. So,
all right.
I've made these sandals, one of my sandals, into my surgery shoe. Well, it was big enough, it was Velcro, you know.
So it was unattractive Velcro.
And it just slides over the toe and then straps around the ankle.
Nice.
So I figure that's as good as a surgical shoe for what I have to do.
Well, what about, does it flap when you walk?
Or? No. No, it's pretty solid on the bottom. It's like a river hiking sandal.
I got you. Okay.
You know, it's got the stability strap on the side. It's a high quality product.
Great. All right.
So that should be enough. But I go see him again tomorrow.
All right. Sounds
so he's got to take off. He's going to change the bandage. He assures me that the new wrapping will be smaller. But
No, that is not.
All right. So that's what's going on. That's why I'm wearing a sandal in this weather. And I had to go. I asked Cody if I could use a term. He said, no, you can't use that term anymore because it's racist. But I went old school today, mm-hmm. and I had to put a grocery bag over my sock inside the sandal. Like a plastic grocery bag. Because in the shower, I bought this cast cover, which is great.
Okay.
It's got a seal. It slides right on.
Sure.
Boom. Perfect. My foot stays dry in the shower. But it's big. It's a big bulky thing because it's supposed to go over cast, too. Well, as I'm getting ready to leave today, it starts freezing rain. And I'm mm-hmm. like, well, I can't get my sock wet because then my bandage will get wet. And then it will undo all the good I've done by sitting on my butt for the last 3 days. So I remembered back in the old days, and Roger, you'll remember this.
Yeah.
Cody, this is way before your time.
Yeah.
Some people listening will remember this. Back before we had really good warm winter boots, we had what we love to call galoshes.
Mm-hmm.
Just a black rubber boot that went on over your shoe, and it buckled up. And 90% of the time, they would get a leak, and your shoe would still be wet. But your mom, when it was really cold outside, or really wet outside, or if your boot, you know, sprung a leak and they didn't have the money to buy new ones, you would put what inside?
You put a plastic bag over
a bread bag or a grocery.
Right.
Well, we didn't have, it was paper grocery bags back then.
Right.
So it was bread bags. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd dump out all the, you'd pray that your family would finish up the Wonder Bread.
Well, everyone had a bread basket anyway.
Right.
So you would take it out of the bag anyway and put it in the bread basket.
And then you'd put those bags over your shoes or over your socks and then put your shoes on and then put your boots on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you would go out. So today I was leaving the house and I had my, you know, one foot, my right foot, I had a nice boot. And the other shoe, I had a big wool sock covered by a white jewel bag with my Teva sandal. And my daughter looked at me and said, are you going to take that off when you get to work? I was like, yeah, I'm going to take it off when I get to work. But it's supposed to be snowing when I leave.
Yeah.
It's raining now.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get my sock wet. And I know it looks stupid, but what are you going to do?
Right.
Fashion be damned. I think I may start a new trend, right, Cody? Because I'm a trendsetter, aren't I?
You sure are, Brian.
That's right. Thank you.
Well, and plus, you're on radio. No one's going to
see. Nobody's going to. And plus, it's my foot. Who's going to see my foot?
Yeah, but I can't see your foot.
For the record, I did take the plastic bag off.
Oh.
What? One, because it holds
Well, you
heat.
Wanted to air the
oh,
foot
sure,
out. You wanted to give it a little, wanted to breathe a little bit.
Right. I can only imagine. It hasn't been bathed in 4 days.
Ooh.
I can't imagine. Yeah. The rest of me's clean. The rest of me's squeaky clean. I'm the picture of good hygiene, aren't I, Cody? What did I say? What's the rule?
That's who you are, Brian.
He's already falling apart.
He can't keep up with it.
No, he can't.
Even I have my limits.
He's uncomfortable with the new edict.
I'm just kidding. I love your hygiene.
Always build up the unstable genius.
I love your musky scent.
Oh, musky. Best fish. Best fish are musky.
Is it?
One of the best politicians, Edward Muskie.
Mm.
Just go with it. Of course it is. I said it. It must be true.
I agree.
And then we hear a solitary gunshot.
I'm like, is Musk somebody I'm allowed to say I like? I don't know.
I don't know. Who knows now?
Who knows?
But I said it, so you have to agree with me.
Is he alt-right? Is he alt-left? I don't know. Is he alt-center?
I don't know.
Doesn't matter. Am I allowed to say that I like Musk?
Muskie.
Sure, why not?
Muskie?
Muskie, Edwin Muskie.
Yeah, I don't want to.
Too late. I said it, so you are. You
know
have
what?
To
if you're
it.
Into him.
By contract,
then
you
I,
have to.
If your leader can say it, then you can say
your
it.
Your fearless leader.
Yeah.
Your elected highness.
You are fearless, aren't you?
I am. The most fearless. All right, listen. On the other side. All right. I'm going to have to ask these guys about this. They're theater guys. I have a problem with one of the Golden Globe nominees. Not a problem with the film. The problem with its categorization. We'll talk about that later. So, the creators of True, which is a new musical that is going to premiere at the Chicago Musical Theater Festival, are going to join me on the other side of the news. We'll talk about the show, talk about how you can see it, and how you can support new musical theater here in Chicago and across the nation with a fine festival that's happening in town. We'll do that right after this and the news on WGN. We're going to do as I like to do, Cody. You know I like to turn my attention to musical theater whenever possible. I enjoy the musical theater like no other, having finally come to terms with the fact that I do like musicals. After years of thinking that I didn't like musicals, now it turns out I in fact love musicals. And I have the creators and director of a brand new musical in the studio. They are going to be debuting their work at the Chicago Musical Theater Festival, which is happening in February at the Greenhouse Theater on North Lincoln. They are David Gauze and Leo Fotos. They're the producers, writers, composers, and Leo is also the orchestrator of True, a new musical, and Max Cervantes is the director of that play as well. Welcome, gentlemen. We're glad you're here. Congratulations, first of all, on getting into the festival. This is the fourth year of the Chicago Musical Theater Festival?
It is. Yeah, it's hosted by Underscore Theater Center, or Underscore Theater Company, and they've done their whole 4 year with us.
Very nice. So how did you get involved? What's the process? Before we talk about the process of True and what True is all about, what's the process of getting into a festival, and how big a deal is that for a new production?
Yeah, we actually had a friend who last year worked for Underscore, and he suggested we submit materials for this festival, so we had to compile demo recordings and get like a nice tidy script with some other just like a synopsis and things like that, and bundled it all up nicely, sent it off to this festival via their online portal, and just hoped for the best, really.
And I know I read they had they've done 50 new musicals in the last few years, but they had over 100 or some inordinate amount of submissions to get to the point where they're putting up. How many shows are being put up?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So they narrowed down their however many submissions. I think it was, about 100 to seven.
Seven.
So we are
That's
one,
not bad.
I know. We are one of seven right now. So it's an honor. It
Congratulations.
Really is an honor.
All right. Now, I've got to ask because, David, you got a degree in economics from the University of Chicago.
Yes,
you're
that's correct.
You're a smart guy. You're a strategic enrollment management consultant. I don't know what any of those words mean other than enrollment. I understood that one. And strategic, kind of, I used to play Stratego as a kid. So I get that. And now, Leo, you a little more. You studied music, so okay, that's a little more. How do you two guys come to write a musical? Because this is your first foray into this, and now it's at a festival. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. So we like to joke that we're constantly polar opposites. So yeah, David obviously has this huge economics degree. I did some time in school and did not end up finishing. So in that sort of way that he can think one way and I can think the other. We come together to be sort of the left and right brain that can write a story together.
And had you dabbled in this at all before you started working on True?
No, I mean, neither of us really knew how to even write a quarter note going into this.
Yeah.
We had to start from the beginning and learn.
Yeah, it was a lot of just learning on the fly. I mean, we met through a community theater production, and
okay.
We liked the idea of, you know, we don't love all musical theater, but we wanted to create something that the two of us would like, and so we were these kind of cocky, arrogant teenagers who wanted to take on the world, and so, you know, 4.5 years later, we're very fortunate to be in this festival with a finished product.
Wow. And so the process has taken 4 years, 4.5 years?
A little over 4 years, yeah.
That's amazing. Now, Max, when did you've been directing and working in theater for a while. You work out in, you work with BAM Theater in Hinsdale, right?
I do, yeah.
So you've been doing this for a while. Did you know these guys before? How'd you get hooked up with these two?
That's a great story, actually. I directed Leo in a production of Rent at BAM Theater in Hinsdale, and he played Roger. And then we had him back again next year in Les Miserables, and he played Jean Valjean. And then within that time, we just, you know, started becoming closer. And then last year, they asked me to be in the show, actually, in True.
Okay.
And I played Truman, the lead. And then since then, it's kind of evolved into this relationship of now I'm directing it. So it's kind of it's been a really great organic way to see what happens with a live piece of theater that changes over time. But, I mean, these are really great guys, so I'm really excited to be doing this with them.
Having been around theater so much, was there any hesitation to, I mean, you knew these guys from other stuff, you knew David, or knew Leo. Was there a point where you said, they're new, is this going to work? They have this great idea, and it sounds okay, did you ever go, these two can't pull this off?
Oh, there's yeah, not a chance. Every day. No, I'm just kidding. No, but the thing is really it's like the people. It's the people behind the curtain. It's the people behind the work, and they are just so incredibly passionate, and I saw that from day one when they even brought the script and they brought the music, and you just listen to it, and you're just like, all right, I'm there. I'm on it, and just also watching it change over the past couple of years, it's just been really cool, but it really goes back to the people behind the magic, and when you trust those people like these guys, I mean, I trust that anything can happen and that it's going to be a great thing. So, yeah.
What's the biggest challenge? Because it would be hard enough to write a play. It would be hard enough to write a song. But to try to write a play and then write songs that not only move the story forward, but lift it up and make a statement. What was the toughest part for you guys coming up with this?
I think it's been a challenge, not necessarily getting all the moving parts together, but to sort of make the characters seem human.
Okay.
I know that David and I have sort of fallen out of love with a lot of musicals that have characters that are just sort of there, and they don't push the story forward, but they're there because they have people that need to be on stage in order to have a musical.
Which ones?
Oh, I'm
Dish,
not,
come
I'm
on,
not
yeah.
gonna name
any. Yeah, throw somebody under the bus before your big debut.
Oh, goodness. No.
Make enemies in the theater community and then go off with your show.
we really struggled to write characters at the very beginning that
felt like real people that were sincere in their intent, sincere in their emotions, but also, someone that anyone could relate to, really.
I think that sincerity came in once we realized that each of these characters takes little bits and pieces of ourselves and the people that we know and love in our lives.
Well, we're going to talk about what True is about, and it has a very important message. But, Max, you said you originally were playing True. Are you playing True now when it debuts at the festival?
I am not.
Okay, because now you are directing. And when you've directed others, you said you've directed Rent and Les Mis, and you've helped with a lot of other productions of things that were well established. Mm-hmm. So while as a director you're going to add your own spin on certain things, you kind of know this is how Les Mis is supposed to be. I'm not going to make Les Mis with a cow as the lead. And so, I'm not going to go. These guys are making notes. That's fantastic. You take that one. It's free. I give everybody one idea when they come in. That's your party gift. I don't have gift bags. I give you one good idea. Les Mis with a cow.
That's great.
But so now you're creating something brand new.
Yeah.
What's the biggest challenge there?
I don't think there's I think it's just collaboration. It's just being able to work with a living piece of theater, a living piece of art that you're able to question, you're able to challenge on a day-to-day basis.
Well, because there's no right or wrong yet because it hasn't been set, correct?
Yeah, absolutely, and it's always a work in progress. So for me, it's kind of like being able to take the blank canvas, but then see what behind the canvas, what the people that like are providing the colors. Wow, this is a intense metaphor, but they're like providing the paints, and then I get to help create the portrait. But knowing that it's all kind of like I said, in progress, it's just really comforting, really cool, and it's all about collaboration. So.
And were these guys easy to collaborate with?
They're horrible. It's so hard.
No, of demands just getting them in here, so I can only understand. What's your favorite musical? You can tell us.
That's a great question.
Your favorite is easy. You don't have to diss anybody.
Yeah, I love Wicked.
Okay.
Wicked was the first show that I saw on Broadway. I was 8 years old, and it basically changed my life.
Yeah.
That scene with Elphaba in Defying Gravity.
Yeah.
I don't think my jaw has ever been closer to the floor. and that ultimately, turned me down this road of musical theater as a passion of mine, despite all of my nerdy academic background.
With an economics degree, they don't really jive, but it's nice to have a passion outside of work, and especially like the other side of your brain, because economics is very...
Yeah, it's a lot easier to find a job doing quantitative stuff than it is to and then have a hobby in theater that is turning profession than the other way around.
Now, have you... Leo, you want to answer?
Oh, for my favorite musical?
I've given you time now. You are the most evasive theater guy ever. Usually people can't wait to say what their favorite and their least favorite is. You are very close to the best.
And that's why we do this.
Is it some Russian play? Is there collusion in the theater world?
I think the reason why we do this is because I don't necessarily have a favorite. I have favorite parts of so many musicals. I know, like, in terms of music, my favorite is Billy Joel. I think he's absolutely brilliant.
That did not answer
really. But in terms of a musical, I love...
I'm going to go all Jake Tapper on you pretty soon.
Yeah, I know. I love different bits and pieces of so many.
All right. And I bet if I asked you if you were a Cubs and Sox fan, you'd go, I just love baseball.
Oh, no, I'd go Cubs.
All right. Well, then you really have to leave. That's all right. Listen, we're going to talk about True, what it's all about. Let me ask you this before, and when we come back, we'll talk about the actual show and the message behind the show. Had you submitted the production before, or is this the first time you've submitted?
Oh, before we submitted to the Chicago Musical Theater Festival, we submitted a cycle earlier to the New York Musical Festival, and we were one of, I think, over 250 shows submitting to that festival. We were picked as one of their semifinalists.
Okay, very good.
And then we're not selected as one of the people to be in that.
So we went from, like, the 200 submissions to about, like, the top 20.
Nice.
And then there's only 10 that are chosen from there to...
And when that happens, do they give you feedback?
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
So you can keep working on the show?
The New York Musical Festival gave us a lot of great feedback that we were able to take and apply to the workshop, actually, that Max played our lead character in.
Okay.
And from that workshop, we took all of that feedback, and now we're doing
this. And that's why Max keeps referring, for people who... He keeps referring to a live piece of theater because it keeps changing and evolving. And so and now you've got a production that you're proud of. You submitted it.
Yes.
And it is going to be featured at the Chicago Musical Theater Festival, which is happening at the Greenhouse Theater, 2257 North Lincoln Avenue. If you want information and tickets, cmtf.org is the website. True will be playing on February 10th, the 15th, the 18th. 20th, 21st, and 24th. You can get all that information, again, at the website, cmtf.org. We're going to talk more with David Gause, Leo Fotos, and Max Cervantes. They are the creators and director, respectively, of True, which is making its debut at the Chicago Musical Theater Festival. We'll get the lowdown on the show itself. On the other side, Brian Noonan, WGN. We are talking with the creators and director of True, a new musical, which is making its debut at the Chicago Musical Theater Festival, which is in its fourth year. It is happening at the Greenhouse Theater, 2257 North Lincoln Avenue. CMTF.org is the website. David Gause and Leo Fotos are the producers, writer, composer, and Leo is also the orchestrator, and Max Cervantes is the director of the production. All right, we've talked about how you got into the production, how you guys came to write this. True has a different kind of, because a lot of people think musical theater, they'll think something maybe a little lighthearted, maybe frilly, maybe something fantasy driven, like you mentioned Wicked before, or a biography based. I just saw Beautiful, which was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yours has a different kind of message that one might not really associate with musical theater.
Definitely, and that's not to say it doesn't have elements of, you know, the flash and flair and fun show tune, things like that, because life is fun from time to time, but also, you know, when you go through life, the subject matter of True deals with what it can be like to live with mental illness.
Okay.
And our goal with this show is to help raise awareness for people to, you know, be able to reduce stigma associated with mental illness. And so through this story, we're really focusing on this community. And one of the community members is living with mental illness. And we like to show how the community shows empathy towards that person as he deals with this internal struggle.
Okay. That sounds like a difficult subject to write about, even if you know people who are going through it themselves. It seems like something that would be difficult to say, hey, we're going to put this to music. Because, again, I think music, and I know there are also sad songs in musicals and heavy songs, but, you know, top of my mind, I'm like, this has got to be really tough to write about.
Yeah, and I mean, other shows have been written about this topic.
Sure.
Other pieces of art have been written about this topic. One being Next to Normal by Jason Robert Brown is another musical that sort of talks about and deals with mental health and mental illness. And that show really bases around, you know, one character who's struggling in this. True sort of bases around the community helping that one member of the community.
Okay.
It's not necessarily about the person and their mental illness. It's about the community with one member of the community just so happens to have
It follows him in all different kinds of relationships, and there's a lot of relationships portrayed in the show, correct?
Yeah, so Truman, our character, he's a high school poetry and English teacher. He lives by himself. He has family. He has friends. He has a wonderful mentor, you know, fairy godmother type of figure, archetype.
Okay.
And, you know, he's a very central figure in this community, which the audience gets to see early on in the show. But then the audience also gets to be clued in on his internal struggle that he's dealing with when he's by himself, home alone, not necessarily with his friends, not necessarily around these people. And, you know, the story is that balance of internal conflict combined with hiding it from the outside and then coming to terms with it and then allowing the outside to help.
Yeah, and the show really, I mean, True really takes a look at sort of that first take on someone and then like a double take on someone.
Okay.
You know, seeing someone who's really outgoing and then taking that second glance at what's going on in their personal life.
While also being, you know, it's the 2018 and it takes place in present day and we're obviously all glued to the screens in front of us.
Right.
And I think this is an opportunity to literally, if you're in the house, if you're in the audience, you do not have that screen in front of you. But more so, it's the stories about compassion and about love and about, you know, kind of understanding what someone else is going through. And if you don't understand it, then asking a question or just simply giving some space or just taking that screen away from your face that you're buried in every single moment of the day that a lot of us are doing that. I think this show is kind of just like a mirror up to that and being like, you know what, just take some time to show some compassion to your neighbor or your friend or the flower shop woman that you see every day and that you don't really know what's going on, but she has a great, happy, you know, face and a great, happy outlook on life. So.
And Max, did playing True early help you when it came to direct it?
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. At the same time, it is continuing to change, but I think the heart of the character has remained the same. And for me as an actor and a director now, it's kind of, I feel like I am cheating because I get to do the juicy part of playing, or of kind of giving someone else or allowing someone else to see some of the perspectives that I had seen. But at the same time, it's always when there's someone new playing the part, it's always going to be a new performance. It's always going to be new discoveries that I'm so excited to work with our cast because it's all living. They're all living people and they all have their own experiences that they're going to draw from. But it's definitely a unique experience to kind of now go back and go back to the page and be like, all right, how can this make sense? Not just for this character,
right,
but for all the characters.
And it's got to be not difficult, but a challenge at times having played the part to then see somebody else come in and you think, well, I did it great. Cause I'm sure David and Leo, like, oh, Max was great when he played True, but now you've got somebody else in there, and this person is probably wonderful, and they're doing something slightly different. You're like, I didn't do it that way, and I was great, so why are you shouldn't
you know, Brian,
do it
I know
that
I
way.
Seem really egotistical, but I promise I'm not.
This is why I can't direct, because if I would, no, you got to do it
this way. No, you got to do it my way. Absolutely not. I think that is the best part. I'm going to go back to that word of challenging. It's like, I'm going to, you know, if there is something maybe that could be discovered a little more, I'll just ask a question, or I'll say, or what about this? But like I said, most of the time, it's the actor coming up with these discoveries, then that as a director, I get my mind blown away being like, oh, I didn't even think about that. Because I've been buried in all these other things, and then they bring up something new.
Have you ever had an actor think they were making a wonderful choice, and it's so far removed from wonderful that you're like, you finally have to say, listen, I don't want to be a dictator, but that's completely off base.
More or less, not really like a specific moment or a choice, but I think like, I think like overall, maybe sometimes you could just be just a little more, I don't know, for lack of a better word, just real, just play what's
stop
on.
Stop acting.
Yeah, stop acting, just see what's on the page. And then from there, that magic comes.
And that's not just with musical theater, even though I would think, there's a temptation in some more traditional musical theater to be big and broad and everything's got to get to the back of the house and be kind of, But when you're doing subject matter like in True, you want it to feel as real as possible.
Absolutely.
Right? I think the way that we've sort of, and you're absolutely correct, and the way that we've sort of taken that realness and brought it into the show, the way that True is written, it's written very cinematically, even though it is for the stage. In the way that locations change very quickly and characters, you know, move throughout the stage in a more cinematic motion than, you know, taking their light or, you know, whatever their big spotlight moment would be in a musical. And because it's written so cinematically, the audience should or potentially will feel like it's a more intimate story and intimate connection with these characters. Like you said, I mean, we're up against Netflix right now. I mean,
right.
People are up. We're up against Netflix. That's so crazy that people would maybe rather want to go to
trying
show
to get people
than,
to come out to
binge watch.
So hopefully, when people do come to see this show, they have that intimate experience with someone that isn't divided by a screen.
And the space that we're going to be into, it's a 58 seat theater.
Okay.
Super intimate, which I think is perfect for this show.
And they have a 2-hour time limit for all the productions in the festival. Mm-hmm. So you guys have to be on and off. You have to get your stage set up. That's something that you, if you get, God willing, you get picked up for a run somewhere, mm-hmm. you don't have to worry about that. You get your stage set up and you leave it. This is like a battle of the bands kind
of.
Yeah.
And that's really up to Max to kind of figure that out for
exactly.
us.
Yeah, exactly.
So thank you.
You put on the director hat and you got the big chair.
That's it.
You get to deal with all that. Well, listen, the show is true. It's a brand new musical from David Gause and Leo Fotos. It's their first musical ever, and it has been accepted in the Chicago Musical Theater Festival, which is a project of the Underscore Theater. Their show is going on February 10th, 15th, 18th, 20th, 21st, and 24th at the Greenhouse Theater. All the shows of the festival are at the Greenhouse Theater. You need to go to cmtf.org and get all the information and go support some local theater. It's during Chicago Theater Week. Some of the shows that are seen during this week get picked up and produced. We're hoping that's the same because then Max could become more dictatorial in his direction and tell people, listen, you're not doing it my way, so you have to hit the bricks. Max Cervantes is the director. David Gause and Leo Fotos are the creators of True. Best of luck, guys. It was great to meet you. Good luck at the festival. It sounds like a wonderful show, and you know, we'll talk to you again, I hope.
Thank you so much.
You are very welcome. All right, cmtf.org is the website. Go get all the information and go see True. All right, we'll do this. Then it's news time. WGN. Roger, it's supposed to snow all night? Is that what you're saying now?
Light snow, freezing drizzle through about 5 in the morning, on and off. Just enough to make it miserable.
Miserable. That's what we need. More misery.
Yeah.
It's going to be 50 on Thursday. This town is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then
it's going to get cold again.
Sure, of course.
Yeah, it's going to drop down into the teens in about a couple of days after that.
Listen, all I want is 60s in New Orleans in early February. That's all I want.
Oh, there you go.
That's all I want.
Can you be able to make it there? Your foot will be ready by then?
Oh, the foot's going to be all set. The foot's going to be lovely by then. I asked him before he even started to cut.
Uh-huh.
Said, I just want to make sure. How long? He said, 3 weeks. I said, I'm leaving for New Orleans in 5. He said, don't worry.
So, beautiful.
All right. Have you guys seen this movie Get Out? Cody, did you see the movie Get Out? You see it, Roger?
No, I have it at home because we get the screeners.
That's how I watched it because I get the screeners too. Cody's not a dues paying member of SAG or AFTRA.
I've watched scary movies before. I don't go out of my way to see those kind that are purposely meant to just, you know, scare you every second.
All right, I'm going to stop you right there. Because you've used the adjective twice, and this is the purpose of my question.
Okay.
You've said scary movie.
Yeah.
Which it is supposed to be a scary movie.
Right.
What category is it nominated in for Golden Globes?
I think
musical or comedy?
Comedy.
It is not a comedy at all.
Really?
There are, well, since you guys haven't seen it.
Funny spots in it? Humorous moments?
There are like 3 funny lines from the main character's best friend.
Uh-huh. And that's it?
That's it. It is not if you've seen Get Out, I'd like to hear from you. If not, that's okay. 312-981-7200. I watched it and it was fine. Mm-hmm. First of all, it's kind of a remake, not a remake. It's a kind of Rosemary's Baby kind of film.
Okay.
All right.
That kind of a theme.
Yeah. Okay. Where this guy goes to meet his girlfriend's parents. Turns out they're crazy racist. There's a whole big thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to spoil it for people who haven't seen it.
Right.
But I will say it is neither there's no music in it. So it's not a musical. And it's not a comedy.
Do you know the story behind this?
Behind, it was made by the guy, one of key, it was Peele, right? Jordan Peele.
But do you know the story behind why it's in the comedy category?
No.
Because there's no horror category.
But it was more drama than horror.
The producers wanted to submit it for a Golden Globe, and they felt that they had a better chance of winning by submitting it comedy category.
All right.
Because there was a big Twitter uproar when it was first announced,
okay.
And everybody on Twitter, oh my god, it's not a comedy movie, blah, blah, blah. You're being, like, they're accusing everybody of, like, being racist
sure,
by doing it on the committee.
I didn't accuse him of being racist. I just thought it was stupid.
Well, a lot of people on Twitter were accusing
everybody.
Well,
Twitter accuses everybody of everything.
That's true.
If you read Twitter enough, I killed Kennedy. I also killed puppies. And I'm a blowhard.
Yeah.
Only
really?
One of those. Only one of those is false.
I've been called a lot as well.
Only one is false.
But it turns out the producers of the film are the ones who submitted it to the Golden Globes because they felt it had the best chance of winning in that category. And there's no horror category, so they're like, well, I mean, it's a horror movie, right? So what are we gonna do?
Yeah, because I'm looking at the drama competition. That's pretty stiff. You got Dunkirk. You Call Me By Your Name, The Post, The Shape of Water, and Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, which I watched last night. Phenomenal.
There you go.
Yeah, see, we haven't gotten all of our
I haven't gotten all my screeners yet either, but I got that one.
So I, Tonya, and now...
I watched I, Tonya the other day.
Yeah. And the biggest argument in our house, how do you pronounce the name?
Tonya. Tonya Harding.
I always say Tonya.
Well, you're
I don't
wrong.
Know why.
I
know.
To the movie.
Bridget is right.
In the
I
movie,
know.
They say Tonya.
I, Tonya. I know,
she
but I'm stuck
Tonya.
On Tonya.
Why? It's
I
not
don't
her name.
Know.
Roger?
Why
would you mispronounce
Well, if we were in
name?
French, in France, that would be Roger. Thank you very much.
Well, then I didn't pronounce it that way either.
I know you
I
did.
Just choose to say Roger.
Well, that's fine.
Because you chose to say Tonya.
I know.
Tonya.
But I thought it was an excellent movie, and I thought Allison Janney was awesome in it.
I'll tell you what. I usually like Allison Janney.
Mm-hmm.
I liked her in this because I hated her so much. She made that character of Tonya Harding's mother totally despicable. And I'll say this. If you haven't seen the film, it's out in theaters now, but
yeah.
Roger and I are union members, so we get the screeners, which
yeah.
I'm sure you bent it, broke it, and set it on fire, and destroyed it. The minute you were done watching
it. I shredded it.
Sure.
I've got an awesome shredder.
Yes, you shred them.
Yeah.
All right, I'd lend it to Cody, but I can't. It says
nope.
Right there at the beginning.
Oh, they'll come and arrest you.
Yep. The man. There's a watermark on it somewhere.
That's
super
right.
Secret watermark.
Yeah.
That tells them who played it. And what it went to. So it won't even play on your player code.
It's deep, what do they call it? The
I don't know, the deep state.
Deep state,
deep state.
They're watching you.
They are.
Yeah.
But I watched this movie, I, Tonya, and I thought to myself, if this is real, if
mm-hmm.
if a quarter of what happened to her is real,
mm-hmm.
this poor woman, I feel awful for her.
I know.
It's like, oh my God, if the way she was treated by skating, her mother, her husband,
boyfriend,
Galuli,
right? Yeah.
The fat Shane guy,
mm-hmm.
everybody but her father who abandoned her, so I guess we got to put him on the list too.
Yeah.
Everybody in her life kind of poo-pooed her
mm-hmm.
and pooped on her.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
What a life.
What? Yeah.
Seriously.
What a horrible life. I mean, to have the potential to get to those heights
mm-hmm.
and have your mother do that to you. And again, I know it's a
dramatization,
but
still, it's based on fact.
Well, and they
how
showed,
far do you stretch? If
they
if
showed
the life...
some of the they showed some of the interview with the mom at the end,
right?
And it was almost verbatim what was in the movie.
I know. And then the bodyguard.
Oh, that guy.
Oh my God, it was so creepy.
See, and I forgot how goofy he was.
Yeah.
When it really happened. And I remember it happening, as I know you covered it in the news.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I forgot about him. And the guy, the eyes always kind of closed
mm-hmm.
like he's stoned after, he was probably just in a food coma.
Yeah.
He's just wandering. Oh, it looks like the guy from, This Is Us won again.
You're watching the,
No, I'm not watching it.
Well,
it's on, and I just happened to look up to see if everybody was wearing black. I gotta see who supports sexual harassment.
A lot of people have.
I don't know. This guy must, because he is, he's wearing a white tuxedo shirt.
Let's see here.
Is it, Sterling K. Brown?
Yep.
Yep. Who's a fine actor, and I think he's great in This Is Us, but he's wearing a white tuxedo shirt.
Elizabeth Moss wins, Handmaid's Tale.
Is that right?
Have not. Been able to see that yet. Sam Rockwell, Three Billboards.
He was really good in that.
Yeah, he won for best performance in a supporting role.
Did you get that one yet?
No, I haven't gotten
it. Oh, you got to watch that one when you
get it. We're supposed to get a whole bunch, and we still haven't gotten them.
Yeah, see, now, all right.
But we got an email saying that that they sent them out late.
Yeah, and I got something in the mail, too, saying that all these other ones were coming.
Yeah, right.
And then I got a postcard, because all these Netflix ones were supposed to come.
Right.
And then I got a postcard saying, hey, you're invited to a screening. And I'm like, that's not what it said.
And then you can do the digital version, but then you got to sit in front of your computer.
No, I want the DVDs.
Yeah.
I'm old school. I like
the
DVDs.
I agree.
I'm just, that's why I pay my dues. Just so once a year I can get all the screeners and feel important. Feel do it. Because I need something to do in January because I'm not drinking. Because I'm doing this dry January. Have you heard of this?
No.
Oh, sure. It's the big thing, dry January. You missed that segue, Cody. It was one of the greatest segues in the history of segues because I am a master segue person.
I've always said that and I always will.
I know you will because it is fact. Fact is wonderful to deal in.
Yeah, it's in his contract. He has to say it.
Support the unstable genius. That actually should be our T-shirt. If promotions ever supported the unstable genius, that should be the T-shirt.
But don't print it like straight across.
No, it's all over
at a tilt.
It's like a Peter Max photo. It's all kind of blended in. There's all colors, and somewhere in there, there's the words. And then, of course, there'll just be letters everywhere. And somehow, someone will put together one word in the mix of letters that is anti-Semitic or racist or homophobic. Something. They'll bring letters like one from the top left corner to one to the bottom right corner to one on the back, and they'll go, if you put all those words together. It spells a schmuck. What? How'd you put that together? Well, we just do. That's what we do. Dry January is a big thing. It started off with people, and here's why I'm doing it. One, because I've been on painkillers for most of January.
Well, you can't mix.
Two, can't mix. So that was a good jumping off point. Two, I realized 90% of the weight I've put back on was due to beer.
From the holidays?
Just in general. Just over the last year, we started going to more breweries.
Oh, okay.
Just like we'll go out to dinner to a brewery, and I'll have a couple beers. And instead of drinking a light beer, I'll drink a good beer at home, like a Goose Island or, you know. So I've been indulging my passion for good beer.
Ooh, not, carbs.
So not any, like, long periods, but a couple times a week. And then all of a sudden the carbs, it's all the carbs.
Yeah, it adds up.
It does.
Yeah.
So because I was evaluating my dietary choices, and overall they're still pretty good. And I have a goal that I want to, you know, because I lost all that weight.
You've lost a ton of weight.
And back.
And I'm very proud of you and I'm very happy for you.
Well, thank you. And, I've kept the majority of it off. But there's a chunk that I put on that I'm not happy with. Right. And I don't want to ever go back to where I was at the very lowest because as I look back now, I kind of looked sick. But then I put a few on from that bottom point and I thought, and I've seen pictures from that time and I'm like, all right. So I looked at the data of the pictures and I looked at my records because I still have all my records of my daily weigh-ins.
Oh, okay.
Starting, it'll be 7 years ago this July.
Wow.
So I have all those and I was able to, this is the most research I've done on anything in my life.
But it was important to you. That's
so, right. So I found the pictures and I found the dates and I was like, okay, this is where I look good. My clothes fit well. I was happy with how I was doing. So that's where I'm trying to get back to. And as I was evaluating how I was going to get back there, the one thing that kept popping up was, ooh, all right. It's the beer is just empty carbs as much as I love it. So, I decided I was going to try, until we were supposed to go on this brewery thing next week. Debbie had given it to me for Christmas, this barrel bus brew tour. Well, I asked her if we could change the date of that because of my foot, which worked out. And she was like, yeah, we'll change it. And so I was like, all right, well, if I'm not drinking beer next week and I didn't drink beer this week, maybe I can make it till we go to Mardi Gras. And not drink beer and see what I can do weight wise. Not for the not for the alcohol part, but I'm like, well, if I'm not drinking beer, I'm not going to drink whiskey instead or wine instead because my drink of choice is beer.
Right.
So I'll just do this dry January thing. And then I was, but I didn't know it was called that. I was just, I'm going to stop drinking beer so I can lose some weight.
Oh, wait. So this is an actual organized kind of thing.
Dry January started out. In England, it's a big, big thing. It's called either Dry January or Dry January.
Mm-hmm.
The The government's Public Health England program has supported an annual campaign that encourages drinkers to take a break and have a dry January. There's even an app called Dry January.
Wow.
Which is free, and it's created by the British charity Alcohol Concern that shows how much money and calories are not saved, are saved by not imbibing. And again, the money doesn't bother me. I don't have a problem with drinking because I'm going to go back to it.
Mm-hmm.
It was just the calories.
Right.
And I'm like, if I, because I'll be honest, I'm down 10 pounds in a week.
Already?
Yeah, already. Just because I went back strict
Can
hardcore
you be my
on
coach?
Weight Watchers. I went back to the beginning, Roger.
Yeah.
It's like Rocky III. When Apollo took Rocky out to his
That's
boxing
right.
gym in L.A. to mm-hmm. get him back to, I got the eye of the tiger.
You
back.
Look like Apollo Creed.
I do look like Apollo Creed. Thank you, Cody. I've been doing crunches during the breaks.
He's so buff.
And Cody and I are going to race on the beach later. It's
really?
Going to be cold as hell, but we're going to do it.
No and special then, shorts?
There is no tomorrow! That's what I'm going to yell nonstop. So, we'll talk about that. I want to talk to you about it, too. 312-981-721. We'll give you the background on this dry January and the backlash that somebody took. Who? Oh, man.
Calm down.
No, it's a backlash. See, this is, it's Twitter. Twitter is a horrible place. Yeah. Twitter is a horrible place. We're on Twitter, Brian Noonan Show. You can follow us there. Let's do that, this, and then we'll talk some more. It's Brian Noonan, WGN. Somebody texted in. Sue texted this in, and she is absolutely right. Cody, you need to somehow add the likes of which the world has never seen to your praise of Brian. She's absolutely right. I need that in the support the unstable genius. That's what we're going to do. Somebody's on the line. Cody said, you got to take this call because it's very, very exciting. Alex is from Des Plaines. He's leaving for the Army tomorrow. Congratulations, Alex. Welcome.
Oh, wow. I can't believe I'm actually on WGN right now. This is crazy.
It's not that hard, Alex. You dial the number. Somebody answers the phone. We put you on. That's how it works. So, wait, you've joined the Army.
Well, you know, I was working as a CNC machinist, and I was listening to WGN every day from Steve Cochran to Bill and Wendy to Ro Khan and John Williams. And, you know, I joined the Army after I became an EMT. I'm trying to pay off paramedic and nursing school. So,
okay.
Yeah, I'm going to be in the infantry for 3 years. So
Holy
I'm going to have
cow.
To listen to you guys on the app.
Well, congratulations. Thank you for your service. What's the first step?
Well, I go to the hotel tomorrow, and then I swear in, and my family says goodbye, and then I go to reception, and then I go to basic training for about 5 months. Infantry does it a little bit longer because
wow.
Most people who have got, like, a military occupational specialty, like an MOS, that's like if you're a combat medic or a radiologist or whatever, infantry just does OPUT. Their occupational unit training and all that. So
okay.
It's basically just an extension of basic. It goes on a little bit longer.
Wow. So five months. And where's basic training?
Fort Benning over in Atlanta, Georgia.
Not nice.
Atlanta, Georgia, but close to the Coca-Cola place.
Yeah.
You know?
Close to Atlanta. Weather's a little better. But they're going to be.
You know, I prefer the cold, but I'll make do.
Well, this is a huge decision. And was it just based on paying off school? Was there what else were the deciding factors?
I wanted to do this forever, but Superior Ambulance, the company that I'm an EMT at, they have an air wing. So if I get my RN eventually after I'm a paramedic, and I can get my flight nurse certification, I'd like to work on one of their helicopters. You know.
Wow. Well, that is very admirable, Alex. And I tell you, you're doing something most of us would not want to do, and I applaud you. That is very great. Good luck to you.
Well, I'll have to listen to you guys on the app, so hopefully I get good reception down there.
Yes.
I don't think I can get WGN in Georgia.
Well, listen, at night, if you're sitting, you know, if you're not too tired, you can get a transistor radio and sit outside the barracks. Do they still call them barracks? I don't know much about the Army except for what I see in the movies. But you can sit outside the barracks and listen while you drink a Coke right from down the street.
No, I'll do the Chicago style. Get myself an old style and a Malort.
There you go. Bring some Chicago down to Georgia. Well, Alex, congratulations on this and best of luck to you. It's an honor to talk to you, and I'm glad you called.
Hey, it's really great to talk to you, man. I love this radio station. I love your show.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Be careful down there, all right?
Yeah, we'll see. If worst comes to worst, I get to fight in the same war my grandfather did, you know?
Yeah, unfortunately, that hopefully it's not the case, but unfortunately it could be. Alex, thanks again.
Hey, great talking to you. Have a good show, man.
Happy New Year. Take care. That's Alex. He's going into the Army tomorrow. That's pretty cool.
Awesome.
That is very awesome. Cool. Good for him.
Yeah.
That is good for him. That's all I'll just say. Good for him.
Yeah.
Best of luck to him.
I had quite a number of students went right from high school into the military.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Quite a number of them.
That's a huge decision. Mm-hmm. And it's a great career for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fantastic opportunity. And it takes a certain sort of person, I think, to thrive in the military.
Mm-hmm.
And those people do very well. And some people only go in for a few years and they do well too. And, you know, it's not for everybody, but for the people it is for, thank God for them. We need those people. Who think it's going to be good for them to go in and serve. We appreciate it. And I know that rings hollow because everybody throws it around all the time. But I am grateful.
But it's true.
I wouldn't have done it.
It's true. It does take a special kind of person.
Stop making eyes at the girls out on Michigan Avenue, Cody.
They were all checking me
married.
Out. It happens all the time.
I know.
He's married. Come down there and put blinders on him.
He's getting all, getting all flirty. He's making kissy faces at the window.
What?
Going up doing fish lips on the glass. He's out of his mind. Stop it.
May I say, Brian, much like the ladies outside and much like your hosting abilities, that call was the likes of which the world has never seen.
Very nice. Very good. Way to implement our new directives. That's what we want.
That's what I do.
Our new directives are implemented.
I implement directives.
All right. So we were talking about dry January.
Yeah.
Before that. I want to get back to, because I'll say something else that I want praise for, I'm sure. Do you know who Dr. Jennifer Ashton is? She does all the medical stuff on Good Morning America. She's a doctor, very well respected. She does great on Good Morning America. So she brought up the fact that after the holidays, the other day I'm watching this, and she said, you know what, I'm doing this dry January thing because I want to be healthier I want to start off the new year healthy. Because during the holidays, most of us do not lead the healthiest of life. We overindulge a little bit in food. We go to too many parties. We just, things, the 3 or 4 weeks during the holidays, you eat more cookies. I hadn't had cookies for breakfast in, I don't know, a couple of years. I had some cookies for breakfast over Christmas. I'm not going to lie to you. First thing in the morning, you pour a cup of coffee. You know it'd go good with that.
Yep.
Oh, sure. A white chocolate chip cookie would be delicious, especially the ones my wife makes. So those are the kind of decisions. And you know what? Instead of going out once a week, now you got parties and gatherings, you're going out 2 or 3 times a week. And even if you only have a couple drinks at each place, well, now you're at, 7, 8 drinks for the week where maybe you would have been at 2. It doesn't mean you have a problem with alcohol. It just means you're going out more.
Right.
So dry January is just giving yourself a healthy break. Well, so she says this on Good Morning America.
Mm-hmm.
She is obviously a woman who's in good health. She gives good medical advice. She immediately begins getting taunted on Twitter.
What?
That she's an alcoholic, that she's a lush, that how dare she be, doing this if she can't control. It's like, whoa, 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 slow your roll, jackholes. This is not right at all. But this is how social media is. So I didn't do it for that reason. I just did it because I figure I have a week's jump on it already because of the medication. And then, how much cheaper will I be a date in Mardi Gras if I haven't drank for a month before I get there? 2 beers. I'll be a lightweight.
Yeah.
It'll be very exciting. And I'll just, then I'll be able to just be healthier and healthier. So there you go. Dry January. Karen Conti is going to be here after the news. She'll be answering your legal questions. We haven't seen Karen in a while. I hear she's been somewhere exotic. We'll talk about that and the top legal stories. We'll do it all after the news. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNradio.com. First of all, Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
We missed all the holidays because we have not been here. But you have not been idle during these holidays.
I have not.
I can't wait to hear all about this. You went on an exotic trip.
Yeah, it really was. You know, there's some trips, Brian, where you sit on a beach and it's Margaritaville,
Yeah, I like those trips.
Yeah, those are nice, and I've done a lot of those in my life, and my skin shows it. But this was a trip of a lifetime in that it was Vietnam, Cambodia, Thailand, and Singapore via Taiwan. So it was a very tough trip, and it was a trip where you learned a lot about not only other countries, but their political process, the struggles of the people, and you learn a lot about yourself because when you're faced with things that are so completely foreign, and I don't mean a cruise ship, in Puerto Rico, I mean vast poverty, people living on the water with no running water, no electrical current, no sanitation, no food for their children, living off the land. It sounds depressing. Everyone's saying to themselves, why would you go on a trip like that?
That was going to be my first question.
I have to say, even though it was largely sad to see how people lived, they were largely happy.
Okay.
There was no crime that I could see. Even faced with the horrible history of Vietnam and Cambodia. I mean, Cambodia lost a quarter of its population to genocide, the Pol Pot regime.
Right.
And going to the killing fields is not like going to Disneyland.
No, that's not a fun trip.
It chokes you up and it changes the way you're wired to see what human beings can do to each other. But when you come back, I just feel like I've learned so much. I've learned, about other people, about their view of us as Americans and how important our stand is in this world, because people look up to us, or they should look up to us.
Right.
And when we don't do the right thing, it's not good.
When you were over there, well, first of all, it sounds fascinating, but it does sound grueling. Were you on a tour with other people, or did you guys go on your own to do all this?
It was a mix. I set it up so that we had some time in the cities and we could just do our own thing. We got private tour guides. It's very inexpensive there, so that was neat. So if we wanted to see the Hanoi Hilton where McCain was held, we could go spend time there and we could do it at our own pace with our guide. But we did spend 7 days of the 21 on a river cruise of the Mekong River, which goes north and south through Vietnam and Cambodia. And in so doing, we were able to go into the villages, into the rice paddies, go into the schools where kids would ride their bicycles 6 miles in the heat both ways to get to school for 3 hours of poor education. So we sat in the classroom. I mean, we got to see things that you would never see were you not able to just go on that river and get off on those little rural areas.
That's amazing. So you said you learned about yourself. Can I ask, what'd you learn about yourself on this tour?
I learned about myself that I'm spoiled rotten. I don't come from...
Because you're an American.
Because
you're an American.
And even though I wasn't born into a family with a lot of money, I always had opportunity. I had clean water.
Right.
I had formula.
Right.
These people don't even have money for formula, and they use rice, for their children, and therefore their children are born and raised with no nutrition.
Right.
So they don't even have a chance from a physical standpoint. Their water is river water, filthy river water. So, and even their medical care is not covered. It's not good. The communist regime doesn't really do much for its people as far as education. And these people are largely with children that have no opportunities. And even to get out of the country, even if you had some means to get out, it's almost impossible for these people. So even though it's a hopeless situation, they're still positive. They're still lovely, nice, warm people. They're interested in us. I learned that I am spoiled and that everyone in this country has an opportunity. I don't care who you are.
Right.
Compared to those people, we all have opportunity.
So as bad as it is in some areas of this country, it's still not that bad?
No. And, I'm not happy with our government in a lot of ways, okay? But when you see that there's a one-party system, right before we went to Cambodia, they had a guy who was running against the political party.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they just imprisoned him.
They decided
that he was against the regime and they were going to put him in prison. So this is what we have in these kind of countries, where you have a one-party system. The tour guides would not talk on the bus about anything controversial whatsoever until you got out in the open, and then they would answer your questions very honestly.
Were they afraid somebody was listening?
They were absolutely afraid, and they had reason, and they gave us examples of people who were taken away, disappeared, or incarcerated by virtue of just criticizing the government. So, the idea of free speech here, we take for granted, Brian. We take it that we can talk about anything we want and say anything we want is a gift.
And from a lawyer's perspective, to hear those stories about people being just incarcerated for no reason or disappeared, that has to be outrageous. Even more shocking than a civilian who, you know, we know the law, but we don't know the law.
Right, right. No, it's even probably worse for me because I understand.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah, what people's rights are. But again, it makes me think of all the people in this country who take it for granted.
Yeah.
You know, that we get a free lawyer if we can't afford one.
Oh, yeah?
You know, they don't even get lawyers because it's a foregone conclusion.
That
if you're
guilty.
Charged, you're guilty.
Right.
There is no process for the most part. And even our healthcare system, which I, you know, is in turmoil, right?
Yes.
I hear the stories about we're not going to stitch you up until you bring the envelope for the doctor. You know, even the teachers, and I say this to you because you're a teacher, you know, the teachers get paid off. And if the teachers don't get paid off, they ignore the students, according to what I heard from more than one person.
And this is in all the areas
in Cambodia
of Southeast Asia,
and Vietnam.
Kingdom.
You know, I think Singapore is a more regimented society and is a little more orderly. But
well, that's all we know about Singapore. Most of us, is their law enforcement, is the caning
for chewing gum.
Yeah,
right, yeah.
Or for scratching up cars.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think they've toned that down a little bit, because that's not good for tourism.
No. No, you didn't get caned, did you?
No, I didn't get
caned. By officials. I don't know what you and Jerry do at night.
I'll tell you, when I got off the plane, all I wanted to do was chew gum. Why is that?
I don't know. Because anytime they tell you you can't, you want to do something.
That's how I am.
Were you ever nervous throughout the trip?
Never.
I mean, granted, you were on tours and things, but were you ever nervous?
No. There's hardly any crime there. You know, so the only thing that's made me nervous is that and there are 90 million people in Vietnam, and there are 45 million registered motorbikes.
Oh, geez.
And that's registered. So imagine, okay, traffic lights are called a suggestion there.
Okay.
That's what they use the term suggestion.
Yeah.
So imagine you've got thousands, tens of thousands of motorbikes surrounding you and not obeying traffic and coming up in the sidewalks while you're walking, going both ways. So,
oh, no.
So that was the danger that I saw, you know, that there's just chaotic traffic and a lot of pollution there. I mean, the air is super dirty because, again, and I'm going to say this again, we complain about overregulation, right?
Yep.
We got too many pollution laws. We've got too many laws that
why are we tree
ADA.
Huggers, Karen?
Why are we doing this? Because it works. Because it's nice to walk on a sidewalk that doesn't have a 6-foot hole in it.
Yep.
It's nice to not have motorbikes coming at you on a, you know, up on the sidewalk.
Nice to not have to wear a mask to breathe.
They all wear masks.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, it's nice to have some standards. And my favorite line was, you know, we were walking down the street and people said, you know, you should eat the street food, you know, Anthony Bourdain. I'm like, you know, I don't get paid to eat food.
Right, exactly.
You know, if I did, I would.
You don't have your own staff medic right behind you.
Exactly.
You have Jerry.
So,
not going to help.
Jerry and I are walking down, and we're like, okay, we're going to try some street food. So we turn in Hanoi, and we see this, like, electrical converter box, you know, one of those things that are on the street, covered with pigeon, you know what. And the woman is there, I'm not kidding you, cutting up vegetables on top of it.
Oh.
And at that point, I said, I'm sticking to safe cooked food that I can recognize.
Oh. This is anytime somebody goes to a foreign country, you have to ask, what was the food like over there?
Yeah.
Because we think of, you know, we've had Vietnamese food here, or you've had Asian food here. It's probably not like going to Panda Express, right?
I mean, I stayed in nice places, so I ate nice food.
Well, there was there have to be nice places,
yes.
Even though the countries are
absolutely,
you know.
I mean, there's Tiffany. You know, there's all the expensive Prada shops, you know, in every city. It's just that's not largely how people live there. And, yeah, the hotels and there's beautiful restaurants. I mean, it's okay food. Some of the spices are very different. There's a thing called pork floss that they put in everything, it seems, and it smells like a bad gym shoe. And it's rancid pork that they dry and they crumble up and they put in, like, bread and the pho, which is like that noodle dish that they have. And, man, it just doesn't smell right. And and Thai food is very spicy.
Sure.
I mean, to the point of 3 days, your mouth is still on fire. So, you know, you have to roll with the punches. They eat cricket there. Went to a cricket farm where they're raising crickets and lizards for consumption. They eat tarantulas. They eat water rabbits, which are rats. Yes.
Did you have any?
No, I didn't.
What?
No.
You know, I thought maybe you were, if they served it in a nice restaurant, would you?
No.
If it came in with a silver dome over it?
No.
Madame, rat? Ah!
No.
No? Okay.
No, I saw them in the market, you know, it was, I I'm not adventurous. Maybe I was thinking about you, Brian, because I was thinking, if Brian were here, he'd try this stuff.
I'd take a bite.
Yeah, you would.
Just because you have to.
Yeah.
In my mind. In my mind, it's like, I would probably pray there was a hamburger back at the room later, or I had some crackers or something later, but I'd go, all right, I'll try a bite.
Yeah,
just so I could come back and go, you know what, I ate rat.
I was just worried, you know, because there's nothing worse than being sick on a trip, especially a long one.
Especially, and as you said, where the medical care, you might not have had an envelope.
We're talking, they said specifically, if you get pretty sick, you want to get airlifted out.
Wow.
At least to Singapore, if not somewhere else, because it is not a place you go when you have any serious problem.
Wow.
Yeah.
That to me would be terrifying.
Yeah.
Just that thing at the beginning. Hey, have a good time. Enjoy your trip. If you get sick, well, you're going to have to leave because you don't want to be sick here.
Right. And again, I don't want to paint a negative picture because I think...
Well, it's different. I don't think you're painting a negative picture. I think it's very realistic where people... And, you know, some people have that experience if they go to Mexico and they're faced with... Or even you go to Jamaica and you see outside of the resorts. So, but it's a different kind of poverty when it's a whole country and it's a whole region of the globe.
3 million people living on the water... with thatched roofs that make Gilligan's Island look like a luxury place, you know? And the other thing, you know, I liken it to going to Germany. And, you know, a lot of people say, I don't want to go to a concentration camp. You know, and I did.
I think you have to.
And I think I had to, and I'm glad I did.
So what was it like to go into the Hanoi Hilton? You know what? Hang on to that.
Okay.
I will ask it. We'll talk a little bit more because I'm interested about the trip. Plus, I'm sure people want to know. We've been in there's been such an uproar over North Korea. I want to know. You were in South Korea and the Southeast Asia. What do they think of Americans and what do they think of what's going on in this country
sure.
and our response to North Korea? Since you were right next door,
yep.
I think that we'll get a very good perspective on that. So we'll talk about all of that more with Karen. And then we'll get, after the 8:30 news, we'll get to your calls and texts, 312-981-7200. So get them in, get them ready. We're talking the law, and we're talking global affairs as well. It's WGN. Karen and her husband Jerry just got back from a three-week tour of Southeast Asia, which is fascinating. It's a place that most of us wouldn't think of going or may never get the chance to even if we thought of it. And before we took the break, you had mentioned you had gone to the Hanoi Hilton, where many, many people were kept as prisoners during the war. John McCain, one that we know the best. You go to a place like that, and I have never been to a prison camp or a concentration camp on my travels. What's that like, and what did you see when you got there?
Well, the interesting thing, Brian, is that the Vietnam War is not called the Vietnam War in Vietnam.
Okay.
It is called the American War.
Oh, really?
Because the Vietnamese people believe that the Americans, it was their war. That
okay.
they came in and instigated what was
wow.
going on. And, you know, there's all kinds of opinions about
sure.
that, and I don't know that I have one, but the young people, I mean, the people there love Americans. The older people probably harbor some resentment. The Agent Orange thing is a generational thing. They're in their third generation of mm-hmm. having children who have terrible birth defects because of the Agent Orange that we used. And so, yeah, there's some resentment there. So the Hanoi Hilton is interesting in that it was...
What do they call it? They don't call it the Hanoi Hilton,
called,
do they?
The name of it is called Maison. Jerry, do you remember? What is it?
Central,
which is, it was originally a French prison,
okay.
so that when the French controlled Vietnam, they would imprison the Vietnamese there who were getting out of line. So it
okay.
started out as a French prison. Then the Vietnamese took it over and incarcerated dissidents and Americans like McCain who dropped out of the sky
right.
there. But interestingly, the people who gave a tour didn't really want to dwell on the McCain thing.
Huh.
You know, they wanted to show how they had been persecuted. You know, that was
sure. You got to give it there. Yeah. Your local angle. Yeah.
Yeah. And frankly, some of the monuments that they had a little monument where this is where McCain came down near the
did they the
water.
Okay.
And I realized after a while that what the monument was not that we feel bad that we did this.
We
it's
caught
like
him.
We caught him.
Wow.
So you know you have
well
to
yeah you
that
you
spin.
Go that's their place that's
yeah.
their country.
And I think they largely think that we exploded the war and that we shouldn't have gotten involved and
okay.
that we made things much, much worse than they had to be. And but they don't complain about it.
And do they hold, do you sense, I mean, hostility against the government is one thing. As a Westerner who was there visiting, do you get that sense? You've mentioned a couple times everybody seemed friendly. even when you were there, do you still get that sense?
Everyone was super friendly. Yeah. Everyone was out of their way, sweet and nice and kind, and they were willing to discuss what their parents had been through.
Okay.
You know, they don't like our government now. They're
What are you hearing about
them?
Yeah,
I think they're very concerned with Donald Trump. I think they look at him as, you know, here's a country that's been controlled and attempted to be controlled by different forces throughout history. Mm-hmm. So is Cambodia.
Right.
So they're very, they don't like to see people who they think are unstable, and I think they view him as unstable, and they view him as being an instigator, and they don't want anything to be instigated.
Right.
They're very peace loving because of their history.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. If your whole country has been devastated by war a couple times, you kind of want to keep things low key.
And in Cambodia, there's nobody who I met who didn't have a family member who was wiped out. You know.
Jeez.
And so, in some cases, all family.
Yeah.
You know, we had plenty of people who were on the ship who were orphans because of their parents were both killed and their grandparents were killed and their whole family. Because what they would do is they would come in and they'd question you.
Right.
If you were an intellect or you had a college degree, the idea was to eliminate all people who had intelligence and make it an agrarian society. So, you know, they would ask you who your family is, who your friends are, and they proceed to kill all of them. So, yeah, it was a whole generation wiped out.
So they're nervous about
on. And they're nervous about Korea as well. So,
yeah.
And they don't like this back and forth talk.
Right.
They don't understand Donald Trump. They understand that he's a successful businessman. But I don't think they get why he does what he does.
And when you spoke to tourists from other parts of the world, what did they, I'm sure it comes up. You know, oh, you're from the U.S. What's the story?
Yeah, we tried to stay away from
that. Probably better.
Just because it was nice to not read a newspaper in 21 days.
Did you get cell service over there?
Yeah.
Did you really?
Sure, yeah.
Okay.
I think some of these places went from no telephones to cell phones. I don't think there are, you know, I don't know that
landlines.
The infrastructure
yeah, there's
is
no
there,
landlines
so,
or anything.
But yeah, no, there's, you know, there's all the conveniences
okay.
there. But yeah, no one likes what's going on,
okay.
really, for the most part. I mean, I didn't hear anyone go, I really like how this
whole
thing is going.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Did you go to Bangkok?
Went to Bangkok.
All right. What weird stuff did you get into in Bangkok?
You know, I only had one night in Bangkok.
Makes the world your oyster. I heard the song.
I can feel the double walking next to me.
Was it as...
I love Bangkok.
Was it crazy like you think?
Yeah, I could have spent more time there for sure. You know, I don't like what goes on with the sex trade and all that
right.
stuff. But no, we saw the reclining Buddha. We took a river cruise. We walked all over the place. Went to the palace. Went to see the king's place. And it's a really interesting city. And it's, you know, it's big and dirty too.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of interesting temples and things to see.
Again, reiterate how lucky we are in this country to have our system of laws and our rights that people here take for granted. Because I can imagine when you got off the plane after 3 weeks over there, you were like, hey, I'm going to be a better American.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to be a little more grateful for what's going on. Not that you're not grateful, weren't grateful before you left, but it must give you a little better sense.
It makes me feel resentful to people who in this country say, I don't have an opportunity. I can't get myself on my feet. I can't do this. I can't do that. Because you can.
Yeah.
That place, those places, you can't. You really can't. I don't know how you could. Even if you had everything going for you and you were the brightest student, it's almost impossible to succeed and to even, you know, live a decent life.
Yeah.
I feel like we're spoiled, and I feel like everybody should be exposed to that kind of experience in some way. I mean, not everyone can take a flight
right.
and do what I did, but I don't know.
Yeah, 3 week vacation. That's pretty
good. Yeah. I'm glad to be
back,
actually.
But it's a chance of a lifetime. So
chance of a lifetime.
Cross it off the list.
That's right.
Now you're back. Well, glad you're back.
Next one is the margarita.
Is that right? Yeah. Go somewhere where you can pretend the outside world doesn't exist for
maybe.
A little bit. Some vacations are wonderful, but they're too real. And you go, oh, this was great. I'm glad I did it.
Yes.
Next one, I want to pretend there's no real world. That'll be fun. All right. We're going to turn our eyes to the law when we get back. So
okay.
If you have a legal question for Karen, now's the time to get it in. 312-981-7200. We'll get your legal questions for Karen on the other side of the news, which happens after this on WGN. Get it in now. We've got many stories, but we'll start. We've got a couple texts come in, so we will start with this. And this is going to be the next couple days. The roads were icy tonight, and the city salt truck passed me as I was turning. My car got pelted hard with rock salt. If there's any damage, is streets and sanitation responsible, or am I on my own?
They probably are responsible, and I need to look up all the details of this, but the city used to, at least, probably still do, they have a place where you can lodge complaints regarding this kind of thing and potholes. And you lodge the complaint, you write it up, you submit your expenses, you know, your repair bills, and your photographs, and they resolve those things. I'm not saying they do it quickly, but they do it outside the court system, so it avoids people going to court and that
long
kind
of jam
thing.
Of stuff.
Not sure if this exact thing would be covered under that, but that's something you should look for. So probably... Is this person in the city of Chicago?
I'm assuming too, because the street's insane.
Probably go to the city of Chicago website and just plug in like potholes or damage to vehicle or something like that and see if that can help you.
All right, very nice. We've got a ton of legal stories. Let's start because we've been watching this story about the Veterans Home in Quincy because the governor has moved in there on their campus. 15 deaths a couple of years ago from Legionnaires' disease. One case was quoted in the paper. The person called to check on their mom, was told by administrators, oh, the mom's okay. While that phone call is happening, the mom is actually dead in her room, could have been dead for a few days. A law in Illinois caps the amount these people can get at $100,000. That's an old law. It was put into effect in 1972 when the annual income in Illinois was $9,000.
Right.
I can't imagine. That sounds like... I saw that number first, and I went, $9,000? What was that, the 50s?
Yeah.
No, that was 1972. gas was 36 cents. First-class postage stamp was 8 cents.
Those were the days.
Yeah, but, okay, in 1972, 100 grand, that's a fortune.
Yes.
They've capped that. Now, my question is twofold for you. One, is that for anybody who's bringing, is that for the entire class action of people? So is that for everybody or is that per family, first of all?
First of all, the limit is because you're suing the state.
The state, right.
Okay. So if this were a private nursing home, you wouldn't have any caps. Okay. And so what you do is when you have a claim against the state and any state organization, or like a college or a nursing home or anything owned by the state, you have different set of rules in a different court. It's called the court of claims.
Right.
And it's seven judges that are appointed by the governor, and there's special rules. You have to give notice within a year. It's not a two-year statute. It's a one-year notice. So there's different rules. So if you ever have a claim against the state, you need to be aware that you need to move quickly and that there are limits. Yes, this limit is in place. It's $100,000 per injury, and they've tried to get it increased over the years. Mm-hmm. I think Senator, was his name, Rock, from Oak Park. Was that his name?
I think so, yes. I'm looking.
He's the one who had it increased in the 70s, and it went from like 25,000 to 100,000. But I think this is going to be something that spurs the legislators to say, you know, if someone dies in a nursing home or someone dies as a result of negligence of the state, you have to have more than $100,000. It's just not fair to people.
Right. And the people who are suing are saying, listen, it's not about the money. That 100 grand isn't bringing anybody back. It's about trying to change the law and make sure these things don't happen again. It was 2016 was the last time they tried to increase the cap. Belleville Democrat Senate Majority Leader James Claiborne sponsored that bill. It would have raised it to $500,000. It passed the Senate and then went to the House, but that was when we were in the big budget turmoil,
budget
so
crisis.
It just kind of got left behind.
Yeah, and you know, when you sue the government, whether it's a local municipality, state, you have different sets of rules because of going back to that whole sovereign immunity thing back in the day where you couldn't sue the king. The king couldn't be responsible for anything. That's how far back these laws date. And as a result, they make it more difficult to bring cases against the state. And in this case, they have caps. But I think, like I said, this is going to cause enough outrage, especially because it sounds to me from the allegations that they knew that there were problems with ventilation
systems
and the water or whatever it is that causes Legionnaires. And insult to injury, they lied to people and didn't take care of it.
And then it was veterans on top. I mean, you just keep adding things to the pile. You go, oh, you couldn't have done a worse job.
And let me just say this, too. A lot of people don't like litigious people and lawyers, and people shouldn't bring a lawsuit until your family member dies.
Right.
And then it changes. But, again, I think that our legal system is good because if money has to be paid out, guess what? Procedures change.
Mm-hmm.
Things get safer.
Right.
We have cars that have airbags. We have, medicine that has safety caps. And as much as, again, we don't like this stuff, we're going back to my conversation about Southeast Asia, people are afraid of lawsuits, so they make things safer. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes our world a lot better.
Yeah, I agree. It's, think of some of the things you listed and so many more that came about because someone got hurt or killed or maimed, and now the rest of us don't have to worry about it,
exactly.
Which is unfortunate for that person. Do you foresee a time when this cap will be lifted?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know what it's going to be moved to. Probably something commensurate with, the daily wage or whatever.
Does it make sense to have a cap when you're suing a municipality, or is that an outdated thinking too?
A lot of states have it, Brian. I want to say over 20 states have caps.
Okay.
So it's not unusual. And my guess is, just given the whole budget crisis, that we're still going to have caps, but it's just going to be a higher amount.
And when it's something like this, there's no other recourse. You can't sue someone civilly if you can't sue, say, the director of the veterans home or something outside of his job as the administrator.
He's the employee.
He's the agent of the government.
Unless let's just say there's a water system maintenance person outside who gets paid to come in and clean the system, and he didn't do his job.
Okay.
That outside company, could be sued civilly, and there would be no caps on that.
Okay, very good. so many things to talk about. But since we're talking about the government and suing the government, explain a cease and desist order for people, because we know the president has filed a couple cease and desists this week against Steve Bannon and some other people because of this book, Fire and Fury. How do those work? How enforceable are they? Is it something that if you get a cease and desist, you can just crumble up and throw away, or do you need to worry about it?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what the cease and desist is, and having been kind of out of it.
Sure.
I don't know if it was just a formal letter. Cease and desist in legal terms let's say that, you're using my likeness for commercial gain.
Right.
You've got my picture all over your website, and you're making money based on my picture. I send a letter, and I say, Dear Brian, you're doing this. It's illegal. It's actionable. Please cease and desist and tell me that you're going to do so within 5 days. Otherwise, I'm going to bring a lawsuit. That's a cease and desist order. It has no legal authority.
Okay.
It's just a demand. Right. But it also puts that person on notice that they better stop. And if they don't, then you can bring that up in court and say, listen, I even asked him to stop. I asked him nicely.
Right.
I even threatened him. I gave him a warning.
I asked him nicely, then I asked him not so nicely.
Yeah. So
if I write a book.
Yes.
And I interview you in this book, and you talk negatively about somebody in the book. And then, after the book comes out, of course, people want to talk to the author, and they want to talk to you because you said something, headline worthy in the book, and you're talking, and that person gets upset, and they're like, hey, you can't talk about me like that.
There's no such thing.
Okay.
People can do whatever, people can talk about whatever they want. I can't tell you to stop talking about something, even if it's false.
Okay.
You know, the government can stop you from threatening people if it's an order of protection, or if you're a terrorist, or if you're, yelling fire in a theater, the typical example. But you can't tell someone to stop talking.
Right.
Now, you can sue them if they talk and they say something that's about a fact about a person, meaning you, and that is provably not true, and that causes damages. Those are the elements for a defamation case.
Right.
So you can sue after the fact, but you cannot stop. It's called prior restraint. We don't have those laws here. You can't make people stop talking.
All right. Just wanted to check on that. Let's talk about now. We came out. We all remember the Las Vegas shooting and the massacre and how horrible it was. And there was a lot of disturbing stories about how this guy had been in the hotel for so long, and nobody from Mandalay Bay had actually seen. They hadn't talked to me, had the do not disturb sign, so they didn't go. Well, now it comes out that the Mandalay Bay says their staff had contact with him 10 times from the time he checked in until the massacre. There's going to be a lot of civil suits, obviously. Does them now admitting that they had contact with them make them culpable in any way to any legal issues coming up?
I think it could cut both ways, Brian, because if they did go into the room for a they were going into the room a couple times for a wellness check,
right,
because apparently he had the do not disturb sign on for a period of time,
hours,
and
I think
there's a rule that says we go in just to make sure you're okay, especially in Las Vegas where all kinds of things happen, and drugs and alcohol and who knows what. So, but they went in there apparently and there was no problem. So them going in there was not to check on him from a security standpoint. They were trying to make sure he was okay.
Right.
The way it cuts against them is that when they went in, did they not see this arsenal?
Bags of guns?
Yeah. My guess is he hid them, right?
Sure.
I mean, if...
Yeah, that would be an easy assumption. They're under the bed. They're in the closet. They're in a zippered bag.
Exactly. And, you know, and again, hotel employees are not supposed to go search a guest's items. That would be wrong, too. So I think it cuts both ways. It shows that they were in there. They were on it. They were attentive to their guests. They were checking on people, but they didn't see anything, and they don't have an obligation to do that, would be the argument. They don't have an obligation, again, to go through someone's belongings.
Now, let me ask you this. Do you think these are related? Because Disney now has come out, along with Hilton and a few other hotels, Wynn and another hotel in Vegas, but Disney World Resorts is taking away do not disturb signs and just saying having room occupied. And they're putting on there that Disney is able to go into your room and check on you because after 24 hours, if you don't take that sign off the door, that they're going to be able to go in. And it seems as if it's a reaction to this story where, you know, they don't want anybody in these rooms for a few days without somebody knowing what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that helps anything, to tell you the truth. I think what policy would maybe go into place, and maybe it is in place and we don't know about it, is housekeeping. Here's your obligation when you go into cleanup. If you see something like, for instance, an arsenal of weapons,
that might
long,
be
you know, zippered bags that look like a rifle could be in there, explosive, you know, whatever.
Anything you see that's out of the ordinary.
Then you need to check off that there was no such thing, or you need to check off there is such thing,
mm-hmm.
and hotel would then have an obligation to either call their security and have them go and check, or to call the police.
Okay.
So I think that would probably be a better safeguard to put in place to stand in the way of a civil lawsuit, because then the burden, you know, they've done their obligation. You know, we can't, a hotel, a school, a theater cannot guarantee a person's safety when you got a crazy man with an arsenal of weapons.
Right. But again, you think, all right, something should have raised a red flag. 10 suitcases for a guy by himself, that seems like a lot. I don't carry that much luggage.
I'd like to know what the facts are. I'd like to know what the videos show. I'd like to see all of that and say, was there any point in time where someone should have noticed this?
Yeah.
And, you know, hotels are busy places, and I just spent 3 weeks in hotels. People are walking around with all kinds of weird stuff.
Oh, sure, and you know once you check in, you can come in any door you want.
Exactly.
You don't have to come in the main door.
And I don't know how many times he stayed in this particular hotel, but there's other stuff that came out in this last week that showed that he was gambling sometimes $1 million a night.
Yeah, they're going to let him do whatever he wants.
They're going to let him do whatever he wants. They were giving him a room for free for the most part. So here's a guy who was known. You know, he probably didn't look like, you know, some kind of crazy guy.
Yeah.
And he was probably a known entity.
Well, again, if you're going to Disney, they say they will knock and announce their presence, but they are coming into your room every day. Every place is saying this is not a reaction to that, but
and the other thing that might be interesting, Brian, is will there be a point in time where, as a hotel guest, you consent in writing to have your stuff searched if someone sees something suspicious? You know, might that be something that you would have to do as a guest?
No.
I mean, I would hate that.
I would, too,
but
even though I never have brought anything. But I also was the guy when I was on the road all the time. I would put the do not disturb sign on because I didn't need new towels every day. So it would be a couple days before I would want housekeeping to come in. And I wasn't doing anything in there other than sleeping. But, if I didn't want to go out that day, if I was working in the room, if I whatever.
Privacy is a big
deal. Yeah, I just didn't want to go out.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. A story I wanted to get to you about, and we'll do it after the break, since it happened a couple weeks ago, a new law has come in, and I thought of you because it was kind of family law, but not really family law. So we'll talk about the new way that judges are going to decide on pet ownership.
Oh.
Yes. We'll do that. And if you have a question for Karen, 312-981-7200. And then there is one other that I just, because I love words and words do matter, there's a story if we get to it. A wonderful legal maneuver, all based on one word. So we'll do all that and your calls for Karen on the other side. It's WGN. Alan is in Lindenhurst. He's been hanging on. Hi, Alan.
Hi, how are you doing?
We're great. What's your question for Karen?
Okay, my brother's a legal guardian of me. That's like owning a title to a car. And I had a payee, but the payee got tired of him and I arguing about what to pay and what not to pay, so they discontinued his services, and the payee's position went back to him. And he always brings up the past, which is not healthy. And another brother is trying to help me, but he has an in for him also. And I want to know what to do to... I opened up a bank account on my own, and he was mad about that. He said, oh, it's against the judge's rules.
Okay, Alan, I guess I need to clarify. Does your brother have guardianship over your business dealings or your personal dealings?
Well, he wants to make sure that I'm okay and everything.
Did he go to court to get himself appointed as your guardian?
Yes, he did.
Okay, and so he was successful. So just so the listeners know, there's two different ways you can be a guardian. One is just as to financial decisions. Some people need help with that for one reason or another. And some people need help with personal decisions, like what medical attention to get and where to go to the doctor.
Right. So I used to spend money like wildfire. I don't anymore.
Okay, so maybe it's on the financial issues, that there was a determination that you weren't good with money and that you were going to waste money, so your brother's going to watch out for you in that regard.
Right.
Okay, so in that case, it may be against the judge's order. I don't know because I haven't seen the order, so I can't give you specific advice, but it's possible that opening a bank account might be against the judge's order because your brother, as guardian appointed by the judge, has the ultimate responsibility to make sure your money is being, spent correctly. And if you have your own bank account, that could go against it. So,
well, Social Security goes to him, but I want to try to handle and pay bills on my own. He is keeping money from me sometimes.
That's a tough position, Alan, because once that's been determined that you need a guardian, you have to undo the guardianship in order to get access to your money. And if your brother is not doing the right thing, I don't know if he is one way or the other, that would mean you'd have to get a lawyer, go back to court, and get that undone, or get a new guardian appointed. It's tough. I know it's very tough. I have people who...
See, I work in a part-time job.
Okay.
And I want to get my money for my part-time jobs in an account.
I understand. Sure. You want control and access so you can do what you need to do. I completely understand you. But you understand that your brother has now been given the responsibility from a judge to make sure that he knows where your money is. So you're going to either have to work something out. Yeah, you.
I mean,
why don't you do that with your brother? See if you can put him on the account so he can see, on a daily basis online what you're doing. And if he has a problem with it, he can revoke it. But maybe he'll agree to do that.
All right, good
Try
luck,
to work
Alan.
It out.
Yeah, I hope it works out for you. That's really tough. So,
it's tough.
So once somebody has been appointed a guardian, you can't go in and say, hey, I don't want this person as a guardian anymore.
No.
A lawyer has to go in and show why that person is not fulfilling their requirements as your guardian.
This is how it usually comes into play. I had a situation where a lawyer, as a matter of fact, went in for a sinus surgery.
Okay.
And he removed a portion of his brain accidentally. And he was okay, except that he had a complete personality change. And this was a very, very intelligent guy who went to Harvard. But he, like this gentleman has been alleged, he would just spend all the money he had. Someone would come and sell him a Xerox machine, and he would buy five of them for no reason.
Oh,
so he had the part of his brain that was impulse control was completely devastated. So people went to court. We went to court and we got a guardian appointed. And he fought it because, you know, he was intelligent and he
right.
was, you know, you could do the New York Times crossword puzzle.
Yeah, he doesn't want somebody controlling his money.
Yeah. And, you know, at a certain age, you want to control. You want to drive and you want
right.
to spend and you want to go to a movie. And so the problem was he had all this money from this personal injury lawsuit
sure.
that he was going to go through in about a month.
Oh, man.
So there was a lot of fighting about that.
Yeah.
And it's difficult.
And unfortunately, once someone scrupulous people find out about that, you're done.
Yep.
You are out of all your cash.
And a guardian has a high duty. I mean,
yeah.
if you're given that task, you need to do your
duty. They check up on them occasionally?
Yes.
How often are they monitored?
A lot of the courts, the probate courts, it was called a disabled estate court, will actually call people in every couple months.
Okay.
And they want an accounting of the money. How are you doing? What's going on? What do you need the money for? If you need money for a car or you need money for a vacation, how are you spending it? And they
okay.
want to see an accounting of it.
Ooh,
and the judge
good.
Checks on it.
Good. Brian's on the northwest side. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Brian. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Brian.
Thank you for taking my call. I do have a question for you. My wife and I, after a long marriage, we decided to go our separate ways, and that was about 4 years ago. Twice a month, I send her enough money that allows her income to be equal to mine, since I make more money than she does. So they call it equalization, as you probably know, and it's fair and it works out very well. The divorce agreement reads that for the purposes of the agreement, income is considered to be wages, tips, investment income, or any other income. So here's my question. This past year, 2017, my former wife would have received about $75,000 from the proceeds of her father's estate. And my question is whether or not, in accordance with the agreement, the inheritance income is in fact considered to be income, because if it is, it will actually make her income for 2017 actually greater than mine.
Hmm.
I would, first of all, Brian, have to read all your documents to give you a definitive answer, because it's all in how it's worded. I would say that from what you've told me, the $75,000 inheritance from her father would not be income, because it's an inheritance and it's non-marital, meaning when you inherit money, now you're divorced, but, you know, that's her money without regard for the marriage, you know,
okay.
one way or the other. So if you get a gift from a family member or an inheritance, that stays yours as long as it stays in her name. You could argue, however, that given this year she received the inheritance, this puts her in a different financial situation. The judge is going to probably say that $75,000 is not income. She doesn't get to spend it. She probably is going to save it, and she's probably going to put it in a bank account, and so therefore she doesn't really have access to that income. If it's worth it to you to try to modify the support for this year based upon that, you can try, but I'm not real positive about that for you.
Okay. Even given the fact that the divorce agreement reads that income for the purposes of that agreement is defined as wages, tips, or any other income.
That's really not income. Inheritance money is not income. And I don't think under any definition under the law, including the family law statutes, it's not going to be deemed to be income. It's an inheritance. It's a separate thing. You know, if you wanted me to take a look at it, I'd be happy to do that. I'm just not real positive for you.
All right. Sorry about that, Brian.
Thanks for the call.
Take care. All right. Now, since you're back and we haven't given it out in ages, you got a new email address before you left, but then you went to Southeast Asia and people, you know, people don't know. They put it aside. What's the new email address?
The new email address is WGN@AskKarenConti.com.
All right, WGN@AskKarenConti.com. That's the best way to get a hold of you, because you can give all the details in an email, but somebody might just want a quick call. What's the
number? Sure. 312-332-7800, and you can leave a message for me. It's confidential. But would you do so, give me your email address or give me some facts, because I don't want to have to call you
right.
back, and then you call me back, and then we go back and forth.
Too much phone tag.
Give me the county, where it happened, when it happened, what your issue is, and what you're seeking, and I'll be happy to help you.
Perfect. You're back with Steve on Wednesdays
on
now?
On Wednesday.
All right, 6:40 on Wednesday.
All right.
We'll be back here next Sunday because the Blackhawks move, so we're back on. All right, I will see you next Sunday.
Right.
Welcome back
Happy
to the
New
USA.
Thank
Happy
you.
New Year to you. All right, let's do this, and then in 8 seconds we'll say goodbye. It's WGN. Thanks for listening and being part of the program. Thank you, Roger. Thank you, Cody. We will be back next week. I will be in tomorrow with Wendy Snyder from 10 until 1, so I hope you can listen then as well. We'll talk to you then. We'll talk to you next Sunday. We'll talk to you whenever we're around. Rick Hogan comes your way after the news. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn and then cede all control to the machines. It is 9 o'clock with the news. Roger Badge.